Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Paul, what you've written just isn't fair.
Not fair.
That's right. When I was growing up in Bakersfield, my favorite thing in all the world was to go to the movies on Saturday afternoons for the chapter plays.
Cliffhangers.
I know that, Mr. Man. They also call them serials. I'm not stupid, you know. Anyway, my favorite was Rocket Man. And once it was a no-brakes chapter. And the bad guys stuck him in a car on a mountain road, knocked him out, and welded the doors shut, and tore out the brakes, and started him to his death. And he woke up and tried to steer and tried to get out, but the car went off a cliff before he could escape. And it crashed and burned, and I was so upset and excited. And the next week, you better believe I was first in line. And they always start with the end of the last week. And there was Rocket Man trying to get out. And here comes the cliff. And just before the car went off the cliff, he jumped free. And all the kids cheered. But I didn't cheer. I stood right up and started shouting, "This isn't what happened last week! Have you all got amnesia? They just cheated us! This isn't fair! He didn't get out of the cock-a-doody car!"
Why, hello, it is 29 minutes after the hour of 1, and this is the month of March in the year of our Lord, 2011. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed, yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, looming high above the milkpacking district here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. Thank you for drawing near that ye might be amused, informed, entertained, and that your life might be just a little bit better than it was this morning. It's 503-505-6964. If you'd like to call, if you do, here's what you should do. You should call out today, and then as soon as Dawn comes on the line and greets you, just shout something really loud. Doesn't matter. Doesn't even have to be words. Just sort of a bit, you know, Rick Emerson Show, hello. Hello, Rick. Hello, Dawn. You know, and she'll say hello, and you'll go, "Hello, Dawn!" Just as loud as you possibly can. You know, maybe just an open-ended, vowel-based, guttural kind of noise.
That'll make people think that I'm hungover.
No, it's not that you're hungover. Well, here's the thing. You're not hungover from alcohol. I would say that you have an aggregate hangover from days of illness and cold medicine.
Something like that.
Are you on cold medicine now?
I am not. I have not taken any cold medicine today.
When is the last time you took some cold medicine?
Last night, about 1:30 in the morning, because I couldn't sleep. The whole weekend of sleeping just completely threw my sleep off. So last night I went to bed and then I slept for like 2 hours and then I woke up and I was like, well, I'm awake now.
Dawn Taylor, turn off the sleep.
Yeah. So somewhere around like, got about 2:30 in the morning, I took some cold medicine just to knock myself unconscious.
And it's more the Alka-Seltzer cough and cold remedy?
Yes.
So now are you weighing, is the thing that you're trying to figure out whether, are you trying to figure out what it will do if you take it at the same time as you're drinking your Viso?
Well, no, I was just trying to figure out, because I know we have listeners Rob and Jenny coming in later.
You don't wish to offend?
Well, no, I was thinking we might offer them a beverage, because I know that they enjoy drinking of the alcoholic beverages. And if I joined them and I've taken cold medicine, I will get, like, severely loopy.
It's funny that we've skipped all the way past the Viso to the point in the afternoon where you just take it as a fait accompli that you're going to be drinking.
I don't know if I'm going to be drinking or not. That's the thing. I can drink the Viso now and hope that that will just perk me up and everything will be great. But that doesn't take care of the fact that I've been just kind of like sweaty and woozy all morning so far. Or I could take the cold medicine and that would probably help. But then I might be like even more like woozy. It might take the sharp edge off of my razor wit. if as it were.
The cold medicine, you're saying?
Yeah. Or I could just go straight to the Maker's Mark, which is over there, then just to have some bourbon.
Have you considered not drinking? Probably not. What do I say?
Well,
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to speak out of turn.
I have strongly considered not drinking.
You mean to peddle inanities?
I probably shouldn't. Because I will probably take the cold medicine, and if I take cold medicine and I drink, I'll just be like that old man who falls asleep in his chair, like right in the middle of a conversation.
So, guys, so anyway, there we were storming over the hill at Jerry, and
yeah,
and just wakes up later on and just shuffles around. My pocket watch is gone, and then just, you know,
and I'll wake up and you'll have like piled things on top of me and drawn a mustache on me and stuff, and
we'll have walled you up.
Yeah,
we'll have walled you up with the Amontillado. All right. The best part, I was just here's what you're doing. I don't think you're conscious of this today. And again, I'm not mocking your pain. I'm just
It's International Women's Day. You cannot harm me in any way. I am strong. I am invincible. I am a woman.
Okay. Here's the thing that I'm just. I think I said before the show today that I'm in one of those moods where everything is sort of equal parts. Not even bad. Everything is just sort of, even the grim things are sort of funny today. Even the things that would otherwise just be strange or angering or irritating or depressing. There's only one
like
thing,
cancer?
Actually, that has made me, cancer, sure, even cancer. Done today, even cancer can't bring me down. There's the only thing that actually irritated me this morning was something, of course, something to do with my iPhone. And I won't dwell on it, I swear, but I'll mention that here in just a second. Because that was the only thing, and I really just had like a... As my grandmother would say, just a Dickens of a morning. So, but everything today is like you reach that point early on where just the insanity and the inanity and the logistical chaos just piled so high so early today. Before I was even properly caffeinated, you want to talk about trying to figure out when your caffeine consumption is at a nadir. It's just one of those things where, like, before I'd even fully processed, like, the half can of Visa or whatever that I put down at that point, it was just things just went totally off the rails. But so as a result, I reached that place early on where everything just became kind of hilarious to me today. So it is with you. So I'm really not making fun of the fact that you have sort of a sort of sum total of sickness and head clog going on as a result of having, you know, a little bit of cold and also, and then also having ingested a lot of chemicals over the past the week. But you've been doing this thing at the end of every sentence today. You know, it's like how sometimes if you hear like Bill Gates does this occasionally, Gates will just he'll finish a sentence and then he'll kind of just go like, sort of. And I'm not saying you're doing that. John Carmack from id Software who does the same thing. He does this thing which I think is sort of an Asperger's sort of a deal where he finishes a lot of sentences and he'll finish his sentences and he'll go. So then you can see we decided to move away from a polygonal rendering and we're now into a hexagonal three-dimensional space in terms of acclimatizing the users to the end result of this kind of gaming style. And it's sort of like a weird. It's like you're interacting with some sort of a computer that's indicating it's your turn to talk.
Oh.
You know, like you're just like you're trying to pass some sort of a Turing test, and the computer is indicating that it's now your turn to give a sentence. You're not doing that, and it's not like you're. It's not like you don't do those things because occasionally you do. Today you're not though. Today you have substituted your normal the normal audible tick that is sometimes at the end of your sentences with a visual tick, and the visual tick is this. And nobody else can really see it or appreciate it, so I will have to share the glory with them. It's when you get to the end of a sentence, you do this thing today. It's like a three-stage, it's a three-stage process, three steps. You finish the sentence, you pull back slightly from the microphone, and then you do this in rapid succession, sort of a pulling back of your lips from your teeth, and then a kind of rolling of your eyes. In what I can only describe as a Joe Cocker-esque kind of fashion. As though you'd just taken a drink of some rancid prune juice or something. Sort of a, hey, Joe Cocker, you're here. Try this bottle of Moxie, won't you please? Okay, I'd love some Moxie. And then you drink the Moxie, and then Joe Cocker says, yeah. And you kind of do, that's what it is.
So today is normally I ended my sentences like I have Asperger's, but no, today I'm just a spaz.
No, not a spaz. Today you're Joe Cocker. Who's Joe Cocker? Who? Who? Come on. Hello.
I don't want to be Joe Cocker.
Okay. Well, can't always get what we want done. Sometimes it's just a life full of Hobson's choices. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505. Sick, you're not really Joe Cocker. I'm just saying it is as though you're channeling his movements. every so often. Well,
because he's all spazzy.
You still got breasts. You got that going for you.
Yeah, there's that.
So, I mean, that's not really going for you as such. But
Joe Cocker with breasts. That doesn't sound appealing at all. No one wants that.
Are you absolutely certain about that?
Pretty sure. Pretty sure no one wants.
Hold on. No. Before we do anything else, I'm going to go online and I'm going to Google the phrase Joe Cocker with breasts. Now, do you think that that's... Okay, I have two questions for you. Do you think that if I type in Joe Cocker with breasts, do you think that will have any results?
Oh, God.
First of all, well, do you think that I'll get any results at all?
I mean, to the actual... I mean,
that
yes.
To that phrase, Joe Cocker, if I put it in quotes...
Joe Cocker with
that
breasts.
That phrase, Joe Cocker with breasts...
I don't know. Yeah, sure. Why not?
Okay.
Not a lot, but yeah, you could very well get.
Okay,
get
that's some. My. So you believe? Obviously, I'm saying no results.
Okay.
Okay, you think I'm going to get some? Also, I'm then gonna, then we'll do it a second time to see what it auto completes, to see what it tries to fill that with. So first of all, Joe Cocker with breasts. Hold on a second. Oh my God! There's a result for it. There's one. There's a single result. For the phrase Joe Cocker with breasts. You were right. Wow. Now, it's one of those... Let me ask you this. Do you find it frustrating? And I know you probably do. Do you find it... Here's a frustration of the modern age. Do you find it frustrating and angering and... Not unlike when you go to Netflix and there's something they stock, you know, on a plastic disc they'll send you, but they won't stream it immediately. And you've just come to expect that as part of your right as an American, part of the manifest destiny of moving west, that we get everything streamed to our homes. Do you find it frustrating when you go to Google and there isn't a cached version of a page?
Oh, yeah.
What is up with that? What is that about?
I don't know.
Is that where they can? Is there like a little like a code or something you can put in your page that will defeat the Google caching mechanism, so that Google is not allowed to archive it?
I don't know. No. I have no idea because it. You'd think that it would always have cached like everything. But.
Well, in any event, here's where that phrase. Can you imagine? Let me just ask you this: can you guess it with any sort of vague? Vague sense of why the phrase Joe Cocker with breasts, and it's the most fascinating kind of Google result. It's one result.
It wouldn't be someone describing an extremely unattractive woman, would it? Saying that she looks like Joe Cocker with breasts?
Maybe.
Yes.
There you go. And here's the thing. Even though the cache of the page is not available, they have a little bit of the sample text, and I can tell from the headline it is describing either Serena Williams or what is her name? Martina Sharapova? What's her name? But it's Anna Sharapova?
Yeah, Anna Karakova.
No, it's not. It's not her. It's what's her name? I think it was Maria Sharapova.
Okay.
So the heading is Sharapova beats Serena. There are 15 replies and posts to this article, and the first thing that comes up is just someone presumably posting this. The phrase is, "Joe Cocker with breasts is much more attractive." I don't know which one. Maybe he might be describing both of them. I don't know.
Maybe.
I have no. I can't see who the poster is, so I have no way to contact him to ask for clarification on this score.
Could be more of a compliment regarding Joe Cocker than an insult to those two women.
Well, look, I mean. You know, it's not like Joe Cocker is a man who everybody finds. He's got children. Somebody found him attractive at least twice. So, I mean, there's that. All right. Now, final thing. I'm going to type this in again, and I'm going to see how it auto-completes.
Okay.
Joe Cocker with... Okay, you get the first of a result there, of course, is with a little help from my friends. With B. Okay. Joe Cocker with the letter B. What do you think the first result is there?
Don't know.
That'd be Belushi.
Belushi.
Because he did that great Joe Cocker impression.
Right.
Okay, when I get the Joe Cocker with the BR, there's nothing. I've defeated Google. They have no suggestions there. There is no help given to me by the Google search engine. All right. Anyway. How was your night, Don?
It was okay. I think part of the reason I'm feeling so damn sick today is that I was feeling pretty good yesterday, and I thought, I'll just go to this movie screening. And so I went out and was among the rabble last night, and that kind of made me worse because those people are... And We've had this conversation before. We have listeners who go to the advanced movie screenings. And when I say those people are horrible...
You're talking about screening rats?
Yeah, I'm not talking about you guys. I'm talking about the people that are at every single damn screening who are just unwashed and unpleasant and who just have nothing better to do than wait around all day, every weekday that there's a movie.
Well, they don't care about movies. They just got a free thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was behind a guy... I can't remember what... I was going to try and remember this. Eric Snyder and one of the other critics have a nickname for him that is something like Skull Neck or something like that.
Skull Neck? What does that even mean?
He's one of those really... He's huge, for one thing. The guy's like 6'4", and he's like very, very heavy. But he's one of those guys that, like, he's got rolls... He's so heavy, he's got rolls of fat, like, on his head. And the rolls continue down into his neck.
That's so horrible.
It's almost like you can see the folds of his cranium, like, going all the way down into his neck.
He got rolls of neck on his head.
Yeah.
Are you talking about, like, at the back of the neck?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Not, like, on top of his head or something.
Yeah, but he also has wavy hair, so it kind of looks like the rolls
of
that
hair
continue. Yeah.
Wavy hair on wavy head.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, and he's really greasy, and I was sitting right behind him, so that was unpleasant. And then...
Hold on. No. You can't gloss over that. We're just,
oh, and, no, he was, no, and he was telling... and he was with two small children who were... They had the whole row, so it was him and relatives or friends or something, and there were these two kids sitting by him who were probably about 8 or 9 years old, and he was telling them jokes, but they weren't just jokes. They were racist jokes. First joke was something about a Mexican. The second joke was something about black people. Eric Snyder sitting behind me, he actually leaned forward and went, "Oh, so you're telling the kids racist jokes? That's awesome." And by awesome, I mean horrible. And the guy goes, "Dude, just a joke." You know, so that happened.
Now, are these his children, or are these just random children?
I don't know whose children they are. He knows the people whose children. I think he's the wacky uncle.
So he's like Uncle Ted or something. Yeah. The kids have been sitting there. Oh, just stop it for a second. I have to ask more about this guy with the fat head. When you say that he's got fat on his head, which here's the thing. Even if that's not technically true, it gets. I know exactly what you mean, and I've got a great visual going there. So, and then when you say he's greasy, now. I believe you, and I want to know how you know that, though. How did you deduce the greasiness?
Well, you know when you're sitting, like, right behind somebody in a movie theater, and they're only, like, you know, their head is only about 18 inches away from you, and you're just looking at the side of their neck and their face, and you know that if you reached out and you just ran your finger down the side of their face, yeah, it would leave a trough, you know, that you could, like, you know, cook bacon on his neck. It's just... horrible.
It's like one of those. It's like one of those rails at the end of a long stove in a diner.
And then I had with the two kids he was talking to. I had this sort of surreal moment too, where the kid turned around and said, "You guys write stuff down during the movies?" And we were like, "Yeah." He says, "Oh, so you like write about stuff in newspapers?" And we're like, "In like newspapers?" And Eric goes, "Yeah, like newspapers." Yeah,
similar.
And the kid said, and I swear, the kid said, "I write about newspapers," and he tapped his chest. He said, "In my soul." And I said, "Okay." And Eric said, "I did too." And I look over at Eric, and that was when I realized the kid actually said, "I write for the newspaper at my school."
I see.
But I thought he said, "I write for the newspaper in my soul."
So he's blessed with parents who care about his enunciation and his diction already.
Yeah. And then 5 minutes later, he has an uncle who's telling him jokes about, like, you know, Mexican people. So that's pretty much par for the course when you go to these, you know, evening screenings of movies. But I saw Red Riding Hood, which is the new Catherine Hardwicke movie, which I want to actually talk about at length on Friday, because there is much to be discussed about this movie.
Now, I haven't even heard. The first time I even heard about the film was when you mentioned it yesterday. I didn't even know it was coming out. I don't think I'd heard anything about it. And so is it just... I mean, I know you want to save it till Friday, but is it just Little Red Riding Hood, like, redone?
It's kind of Little Red Riding Hood redone.
Or is it, like, edgy and, you know, for grown-ups?
Well, it's... It's for one thing, it's PG-13, so it's only so grown-up. It's very obviously aimed at the Twilight crowd.
Right.
It's got Amanda Seyfried as this girl who lives in this village, and there's a werewolf, and all the villagers are afraid of the werewolf, and she, like, is torn between the love...
Is he a sexy werewolf?
I was hoping, but no. She's torn between the love of two local boys, both of whom are blandly handsome and have no charisma whatsoever.
Wait a minute, so there's a werewolf or a wolf?
It's, well, they keep calling it the wolf, but it's actually, we discover it's a werewolf when Gary Oldman comes to town. And he explains all about how he had to kill his wife because she was a werewolf.
That really is your werewolf tale when Gary Oldman shows up.
Yeah, he gets out of a big iron carriage and drags out two small children and then shoves them back in the carriage. And they were only there so he could tell the story of how, like, he had to kill his wife because she was a werewolf. And then that has nothing to do with the plot of the movie.
These are my children, awkward and expository.
Yes, as is basically his whole story about, let me tell all of you about the werewolf. And he has this great Gary Oldman, like, chewing the scenery thing that has nothing to do with the movie. He also has, by the way, a giant iron elephant that is used as sort of a kind of an easy bake oven torture device. They heat up the bottom of the iron elephant and throw people in it, which exists mainly for, because this movie is just crazy, weird visual stuff. It's like Catherine Hardwicke going, I'm going to be Julie Taymor. It has the best line, I think, in any movie I've heard in ages, when Gary Oldman shouts, and I'm not making this up, lock him up in the elephant!
Awesome. So he's just there to sort of, is he there to give like a little bit of a backstory? Does he just sort of drop in and then vanish again after having given you the underpinnings?
No,
of the-
he's like the combination, he's like the werewolf Van Helsing, like a werewolf master general guy who comes to town to show all the stupid rube locals how to kill the
right.
werewolf. And he's got the power of God on his side.
And he's also like a little bit of a Greek chorus, kind of giving you the whole...
Kind of. He's the crazy religious guy who has the silver knife and is telling him how to kill the vampire, the werewolf and stuff. So it's a crazy movie. It's a crazy movie, and it's quite dreadful. But it's but I'll talk about it more on Friday when it comes out, because there's stuff in it that is just kind of delightful in its awfulness.
Excellent. And so what is it called? It's called
Little Red Riding Hood.
But is it actually?
Or,
it's just
Red Riding Hood.
All right. And this is the chick that did 13.
Yes, Catherine Hardwicke, who did 13 and directed the first Twilight movie.
A deeply disturbing movie 13 was. That was a thing that we were just. It was a thing we were just giving out like. Here's the great thing about that movie 13, which is about girls just it's about some 13-year-old girls just basically humping anything with a pulse and several things that may not have pulses. I mean, just enveloping and swallowing men by the thousands. But it was one of those things that like we got en masse at the radio station whenever it came out on DVD like several years back. And they just, you know, the film company just sent us like 9 million DVDs of that. So as a result, that is the thing. And every radio station has this, because usually you have screening rats. And of course, radio stations have prize pigs. And prize pigs are people who, they don't care what they won. They don't care what the prize is. They don't care anything about it. They don't care like how hard the radio station may have had to work to get like that autographed whatever it is. How few of a certain kind of box set of some television series there may be. It doesn't matter. All they know is it's like a free thing that they can stack up in their house hoarder style or perhaps pawn for drug money later on. So this is not most winners, but this is prize pigs. But then you'll get people who show up, and the thing that they won is ever so slightly different than the thing that was described or the thing that was pictured on the website. Like, the thing on the website was a green shirt with red trim, and this is a green shirt with slightly purple trim. And so then they just throw, like, an unholy bitch fit about it and just get all pissy in the lobby. And so what happens is that the receptionist always has at a radio station right behind the desk in a drawer or a closet or a cupboard or something, the receptionist has a whole pile of things that are not really spoken for, that are just there to shut people up when they come by to get their free thing that they then complain about. The thing that they didn't pay for, the thing that they expended all the energy that it takes to dial 7 numbers on a phone and to say, hi, my name's Joe, to win. They then, you know, see fit to sort of, you know, find fault with. So the radio station always got a big box of those things. But for months, the thing that they kept behind the desk was just copies of 13. So it's like you would just see girls come in and it's like, hi, my daughter won like a Little Mermaid, beach playtime fun set. Do you have that? Well, we don't, but how about a copy of 13? Here you go. Fantastic. There you go, little girl. Enjoy the rest of your day. And so they were just giving them out constantly, and not a few people came back and expressed displeasure with the fact that their prize had been substituted with that. So I watched it at one point, and the whole thing just weirded me out. So.
Yeah, Catherine Hardwicke has she's got some issues.
Yeah,
and this movie kind of helps cement that a little bit.
It is Tuesday. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. If you'd like to email, you can do it. It's rick@rickemerson.com. That is rick@rickemerson.com. Don Taylor can be reached. It's Don at RickEmerson.com. You can also send us a message via the Skype if you like. That's Rick Emerson Show. That is all one word. Rick Emerson Show, and the text box on the website as well. Coming up today, we got your Hick Watch, also a penis watch coming up. Listener Jenny, as well as listener Rob, they're going to be in the studio today talking about the Sleep Country Pajama Bowl. Here's the thing about it. Can I just say this? I shouldn't say this because now I'm losing the. You know what I am now? I'm losing the eye of the tiger, the killer instinct. I am not following the advice of Mr. D. Snyder, who said, "Stay hungry, stay lean."
Oh yeah.
So you know how yesterday I feel like a dick even saying it. Maybe this is the deal. Maybe there's some elaborate like rope-a-dope going on, some mental game. Maybe they're trying to get inside my head and try to psych me out. But you know, Aaron was on yesterday for the Weekend Geek, and we were talking about the Sleep Country Pajama Bowl, and he said, "Well, yeah, Rick Emerson's got a lot of great listeners. Everybody loves to donate to the Rick Emerson Sleep Country Pajama Bowl team," and we were sort of piling on a little bit,
yeah.
Especially later on when we found out that Cheryl had helped them out by because they couldn't figure out how to like you know. Put a link on their website,
yeah.
On their website, you know, or something. I think it was honestly as simple as like, you know, Control C, Control V, like done. But they somehow just couldn't. The rubber just couldn't meet the road somehow. So Cheryl actually just out of the kindness of her heart, not unlike how one would help a small child who is struggling with the shoelacing, help them to get the link put up. See, now I'm doing it again without even wanting to. And so then I was talking to Cheryl this morning, and I found out I do feel like it because apparently we have something like. Apparently, we have something like 700 times the number of donations that we do, or that they do. Apparently, we are substantially ahead. And so, but I didn't know that yesterday when I was sort of doing a little rib kicking. I just thought that it was, I thought that maybe it was like neck and neck, that sort of it was, you know,
wire. I thought for sure they'd be doing well because you got the Geek in the City people. They said Cable House Shawnee's on their team. So you got like the Alter Ego Society people and the comic book people. Dan Clark's on their team. So you got the Pirate Vote. Come on.
I think as Cheryl put it.
Just like none of those people have money, I guess.
I think Cheryl said that really the upshot appears to be that pirates are cheap. They don't like to pay for things.
Yeah, that's true.
Which I guess maybe we could have sussed out because, you know, pirate.
Pirate.
So anyway, so you got to rein me in, but at some point it sounds like I'm becoming a little too, I don't want to run up the scoreboard. It would be declassé. And also
yeah,
it's for children.
If we back off. If we back off and we don't push, and then they like catch up with us, and God forbid even surpass us, it'll be our own fault because we did not, you know, stay the course.
We didn't finish them off when we had the chance.
Right.
I see what you're saying.
No mercy, Rick Emerson.
Okay, no, fair. So you're saying really it's sweep the leg time is
yes.
What you're saying. That really is what it comes down
to. Oh, yeah.
Okay. This is going to be
keep
just
those donations coming in. Because it's not just...
See, you're allowed to do that.
We want to destroy Geek in the City. Don't get me wrong. But we also need to destroy all of those other, like, terrestrial radio stations so we can show them that the Emerson Army is still powerful.
Okay, so they have to taste the cold sting of our steel.
Yes.
Really, so that they know that we're not to be... So what you're saying is... Somebody has just, John from our team has just typed in all caps, "We will destroy them." So apparently... Well done, Don Taylor. So the... So really what you're saying is, and this is just my read on your assessment of the situation, that the Geek in the City team, they are just collateral damage.
Yeah, really.
That really our goal isn't to destroy them. No. That is, as Hannibal Lecter would say, incidental to the larger goal of helping children, sure,
right.
But also shaming the you know the other radio broadcasters and the terrestrial radio outlets, and just demonstrating the width, girth, depth, and breadth and loyalty of the audience.
Frankly, I think it was their own foolish, fault for deciding to take on the juggernaut that is the Emerson News Network in the first place.
All right. Well, see, no, you brought me around. All right. Well,
I mean, they are lovely people, sure, but they dove into the choppy waters of the Atlantic in a rowboat.
I guess that is true. I mean, they are hoist by their own petard.
Mm-hmm.
They ignored the sign that said "Here there be dragons" and your own public shaming, and so now.
Yeah.
Now that'll just play itself out as it does. All right. Well, okay, good. I had a little pesky nagging of conscience, but you've chased that away.
Thank you.
It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Don Taylor, in addition to the Hick Watch coming up today, also Penis Watch, listener Jenny and Rob coming in today. We'll also clue number two in the E.H. Benny Name That Snack Contest. Did you watch House last night?
I did.
Okay, we'll talk about House. We'll do our House recap, and then you are tracking the following headlines for the good people of Portland.
If and we have time for it, Charlie Sheen, you know, actually got fired.
Okay, did you watch the the second video, his new Ustream video?
No.
See, I wasn't going to either. I watched the first one and I went, I watched it long enough to realize, like you did, that I didn't care. Even if you don't watch the second Ustream video, which I believe he was calling Torpedoes of Truth Volume 2, you don't really need to watch it. I would encourage you to go back and look at a few screen caps from it.
I did, yeah, I did.
Charlie looked bad.
Yeah, I did see...
Charlie looked crack bad.
I did see some stuff of him, like, you know, gesticulating into the camera and wearing a fedora and not looking so good.
He looks terrible. Now, I don't know that he's on drugs. They say that Piers Morgan or whatever his name is. Is it Piers Morgan?
Yeah.
It's not Piers. Piers Anthony is the Tangled Skein guy.
Yes.
All right. How great would it seem to be to see Piers Anthony just hosting an interview show on CNN? Welcomest thou to my pale horse of interviewing. Who is the, is Piers Anthony also the guy that does the is he the guy that does the Myth Conceptions book?
No, maybe, I don't know.
This is the wrong day to ask you things.
And also I'm the wrong person to ask about science fiction things.
Okay. Well, in any event. What was I saying? You know, he did that insane thing on Piers Morgan where he said, you know, Piers Morgan said, are you on drugs now, Charlie? And Charlie said, no, as you can see, I have this drug test, which has been, and he, like, takes just, like, a crumpled-ass piece of paper out of his pocket and, like, shove, and it's, like, got gum on it, and he shoves it across the table at Piers Morgan, and Piers Morgan holds it up, and it's just, again, just this smashed, disgusting piece of paper that, like, was in the bottom of Charlie Sheen's shoe, and Morgan goes, well, if the results of this can be believed, and it does look authentic, Charlie, you do seem to be clean and sober. And then he just, like, puts it down on the floor. Like he didn't open it, he doesn't look at it. So this business of saying that Charlie Sheen was clean and sober because he passed a drug test, like, according to who? Who is it that said that?
I guess he did do a urine test for the people at 2020. Like, after the interview was over, he said, take my urine, I can prove it. And apparently they took him up on it. And after about an hour after the interview was over, they were like, well, here, pee on this stick, please.
Right.
You know, and he did, and he's clean. The thing is, though, there are a lot of things that can make you look crappy, like not sleeping because, you know, you're manic depressive and
which
you should be on meds.
Which would also lead to not eating, and, you know, because
yeah.
He looks bad. The thing is, he just looks, he looked gaunt.
Yeah.
I mean, he has the hollowed out back. And it's like there's thin and then there's gaunt. There's like, yeah. I've dropped 20 pounds in a week look. And that's kind of what he's got going on
yeah,
there.
Yeah, he looks bad.
And, you know, and I'm not saying this is the case because I don't really know. But it's also, you know, it's also possible, and my wife was pointing this out last night, that he did like the 2020 interview on sort of a manic upswing. And I said the same thing everybody else had been saying because she works with crazy people. And I was like, you know, like, well, if that's true, where's the depressive cycle? Like, where's the trough? And Lara pointed out that, you know, he's only, even if we assume that whole thing with the drug test is true, he's only been tested the once. Mm. And she said, you know, for all you know, he was clean then because he was on a manic cycle. But as soon as the downswing comes, that's when he hits the pipe.
Yeah.
Because because she's like, you know, you probably don't need to take a lot of drugs if you're already in a manic cycle. She's like, you know, guys who come in to her ward, you know, it's never because they're on a manic upswing. Guys who come in are all cracked out because they went into a down cycle. And then that's when they start, you know, loading up on drugs or whatever. So, I mean, that would make some kind of sense, I guess. But it was really bad. It was, I had that whole thing like he was sort of wearing a hockey mask made of his own skin. It's very unpleasant. Let's see. Well, what else do we have coming up today? Oh, I just got to, speaking of my wife, I got to do two little brief things. You asked me if I was going to be, and everybody asked this, if I was going to be doing something special for my birthday last night, if I was going to be going out somewhere. And we didn't really go out just because, and I got to say, my wife does her best to be exciting, that's not the wrong way to put it. She does her best to try to force me into some sort of an exciting life or to get me to be interesting, you know, or to do things or just to engage in activities of some sort. But it's just like a losing battle. Because I was getting ready to come home last night and she was off somewhere and she called me and she said, okay, it's your birthday. She's like, I'm out. I'm at the store. I just, you know, get on my errands. She's like, do you want anything for dinner? She's like, it's your birthday. I'll go anywhere you want. I'll pick up anything you want. Whatever it is you might want for you. Do you want me to stop at the, you know, like a restaurant, get you, you know, you want dessert? Do you want like, you want to, you know, stop at the, you know, and get pizza, get Italian, get anything you want. And I just said, and it's like the words were out of my mouth before I realized just how, you know, it's that thing where I think guys, it's like the guys are so zero sum about it that they do not sometimes understand that women are sort of, I think, journey oriented, not necessarily destination oriented. And in other words, that it wasn't really about like the meal being at the house or having the actual dinner or whatever, because I think she'd given up the fact that I was going to leave the house. She was actually now just at the point where she was offering to like pick me up something. because I think she wanted to do it. It was a sort of a thing that she wanted. And I actually just said, no, I got those Triscuits. I'll be fine. You know, and it's like, and then she just kind of went, okay. And so then we went home, and she did in fact make dinner later on. She ended up just, I don't even think she asked. I think she just made dinner without asking me and presented it to me and said, "This is your dinner. You're eating it." So she made dinner, which was fantastic. And then I'm not much of a gift guy, just because. As we said yesterday, I think after the show, sometimes for somebody's birthday or for a holiday or something, when they say they're going to do something special, they're going to go out, they're going to buy themselves something, that is often because people have kids. And so if you have kids, obviously, you know, you just time and money are sometimes at a premium, and you don't, you know, you're not really able to, you know, your parents come, you know, like not just second, but sort of like 12th. But I think largely because I don't have kids, you know, we have a little more flexibility in that regard. So if there's some place we want to go, or if there's some small geek-aw that I wish to purchase, you know, that's a thing that I probably already have. So I'm not really much of a gift receiver, which is a source of endless frustration to people when they ask me what I want, and I say nothing, and then I just kind of go back to typing. But she did find two fantastic things for me. She found, do you remember The Visible Man?
Yeah.
So The Visible Man, which came in two varieties, there was the plasticky version where you could take off the plastic shell and underneath was the the circulatory system and the respiratory system. And then there was another one that lacked which I think was a later and a sort of a more sturdy model. It lacked the plastic outer shell, but it was exactly the same thing where you could open up the chest and then you could take out the heart and the rib cage and the lungs. And she actually, and those things are almost impossible to find. And when you find them, they're really, really expensive. And she found one at just some secondhand store on the outskirts of wherever. She found it some weeks ago and has just sort of been stashing it to go. And here's what she said. This is why she's the best wife ever. Because in my home office, I got a whole variety of skulls. And she said that she believed it was time to, quote, take my bone collection to the next level. So now it's like I got the skulls, and because the guy is, of course, half skeleton, and then the other half is where, like, you've got the layers of, you know, where you can look at all the different layers and the organs of the body. So now...
I had friends actually give me a vintage Visible Woman that was still in the box that they found at a thrift store 2 years ago for my birthday, and I haven't actually put it together yet, because it's the kind that you actually have to get the airplane glue and build the thing, because it was from... The mid-60s or
something like that. Those are fantastic. I mean, I know that, you know, children have technology and so forth that they can use to, I don't know. I know that they just, like, dissect prisoners and scan them into a Cray supercomputer or something now. But
when I put mine together and you put yours together, we could bring them in here and introduce them to each other and they could be friends.
I'm just saying, it's awesome. So it was, and you know how great a gift like that really is. The other thing is that she found... At the same thrift store, I believe, some secondhand location, she found the greatest thing. It's one of those things that makes no sense, and you desperately want to track down the person who created it and ask them why. It is a hand-drawn, I don't want to say it's badly done. I mean, it's better than what I could draw, but that's not really saying much. I mean, it's like one step above, it's halfway between stick figures and like a poorly done, like Ted Rall cartoon. Or something, you know, like a badly drawn editorial cartoon, like in the Sunday Picayune or something. But it is a hand-drawn pen and ink portrait of President James K. Polk. But it's an evil James K. Polk by someone who apparently did not approve of his vast expansion of the U.S. territories out west, specifically annexing part of Mexico and then later Oregon. And so it's an evil pen and ink drawing of James K. Polk in which, in one hand, he is holding... the then territories of California, Washington, Oregon, and Idaho, and crushing them into a powder. And with the other hand, he is taking a long saber or a ceremonial knife of some kind, and he is driving it deep into Mexico, and rivers of blood are gushing out.
Oh, wow.
It's awesome.
That is delightful.
And she said, look, it's evil James K. Polk. And I said, young Hickory James K. Polk? And she said, yes. And I said... The Western Territories expansion, James K. Polk? And she said, yes. And I said, protege of Andrew Jackson, James K. Polk? And she said, yes, and he's evil. And it was $4. And I said, that's fantastic. And it came in a frame, and I hung it directly opposite my chair in the home office. So now I can look at evil James K. Polk for inspiration whenever I work.
That is wonderful.
So there you go. Best wife ever. By the way, somebody just types here, Joe Cocker with breasts. Break me off a piece of that. A couple stories, and we'll take a break, and we'll come back with listener Jenny and listener Rob joining us. Here is Dawn Taylor at the News Desk.
And now, from the News Desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
An Egyptian court has shot down an appeal from deposed leader Hosni Mubarak that would have allowed him to keep the money he accrued during his time in office, which may total in the tens of billions. Speaking to the Associated Press on the condition of anonymity, officials said that the move will allow authorities to launch a criminal investigation and potentially put Mubarak in trial. Mubarak's assets were frozen on February 20th, 9 days after he ceded power following 3 decades in office, and his family's assets were seized 8 days later. He's believed to be hiding out with his wife and son in the seaside town of Sharm el-Sheikh and could be put on trial for corruption and the business dealings of his sons, Ala and Gamal. Many of the family's assets are thought to be overseas. It was recently revealed that Mubarak owns a townhouse in the Knightsbridge neighborhood of London. Meanwhile, protests have continued in Egypt as up to 3,000 Egyptian Christians took to the streets today to demonstrate against perceived oppression by the Muslim majority.
The thing I never understand about these guys is you got like tens of billions of dollars. I mean, if I had a fraction of that, wouldn't the first thing you do just be to buy your own island? I mean, maybe not even a whole island, maybe just like half an island that you split with, you know, like Marlon Brando or that the doctor that killed Michael Jackson or something.
Also, you'd have diversified it in a number of ways so that they can't just freeze it and take it all away from you.
I mean, look, I know people that don't even like to use direct deposit because they're suspicious of how that money might be handled by the bank. And then he's just got tens of billions of dollars like sitting in a bowling sack or something in the back of his office. It doesn't make any sense at all. Let me ask you this. Do you ever think about I don't know if you play the lottery or whatever, because I don't, but you think about if I were to play Powerball or, Lotto or whatever that is, and you were to win like $200 million.
Oh, sure.
Do you ever just think about like what your first step would be? I don't mean like what the first thing you'd buy would be, but I mean like you were just sitting at home and you just looked at the ticket and it just said 5, 7, 12, 9, green fjord or whatever. And it's like you want $300 million. I mean, what do you do? I mean, honestly, what do you do with that?
Well, I wouldn't believe it at first.
But if you looked and you went, well, that is true.
Yeah, I have wondered, because I know that you have to go to Salem to actually deliver anything over X amount of money, like $1,000 or $500. You have to go down to Salem in person and give it to them, and then they give you the money. So you'd have to go down to Salem and turn it in, and it would have to be this whole official thing. My whole thing I've always thought about it is that Patrick and I have gone back and forth on it. His thing, because he's a much nicer person than I am, he immediately says that he would want to take a large amount of it and divide it up.
Give it to the poor?
Well, among our friends and family.
Ah.
Good. My thing is, I don't want anyone to know I'm rich.
Yes.
I wouldn't want anyone to know. No one. I don't want it to change.
Ever or just at the outset?
No, like ever. Maybe eventually I could buy some things and move into a bigger house. And
wouldn't they notice when they saw your tiara of solid gold?
That's the thing, though, is that I wouldn't do that because I wouldn't want anyone to know that I was stinking rich.
Is this because they would just call you all the time? And
because people would act differently towards you and they would be weird around you. And think about how it would be if you knew someone and they won like a $200 million lottery. You would feel kind of weird and awkward and uncomfortable around them sometimes. I mean, it would change your relationship.
I guess that's probably true.
Yeah. It's not like I would have problem giving people money or loaning it to them. But the thing is, once they know you have it, I don't know. But then again, there is that thing. It would be nice to like give a whole bunch of it away to people. I'd just like to try and figure out how to do it so they didn't know it was me.
So you would want to be one of those anonymous donors just gifted to.
Yeah, like I'm the millionaire.
All right.
Where I would just like secretly give people money and they wouldn't know where it came from.
Do you feel like it's almost one of those things where you have to put a certain amount of it in escrow just to keep yourself from because everybody thinks that they're going to handle it properly and safely and responsibly, and then it's like 90% of it just seems like they just end up in a gutter with a needle hanging out of their eye at some point. You're like they're just in a flop house putting toothpaste on their sores.
Well, the big problem is that first you have to get yourself an accountant and a lawyer, and they have to be people that you trust. And then you have to figure out, ways to invest it. Because if you just have a big pile of cash in checking accounts, the government can tax that on a regular basis. So that's why people invest like millions and millions of money in dollars in real estate and stocks and things like that. You have to put it into things that can't be taxed. Otherwise, you're just going to be like giving away vast quantities of it to the government every single year.
Would you be tempted, just be honest, to get at least one canvas sack with a huge dollar sign on it made, just to sort of have around? Maybe not like a lot of money, maybe just 10 or 12,000, just sort of sitting there, like, you know, just on you, just, you know, just like a bag of peat moss sitting on your desk.
I would like to just have large amounts of cash, although I realize that would be unsafe, but I think it would be like cool to just have a bucket full of money.
I would totally get a picture of myself eating a sandwich of $100 bills. Benjamin-y. Just, you know, sort of, that just, I mean, really, just, you know, just enough for the photo op, and then I'd call it good. I don't know why I thought about that. Well, I guess because of the guy with the tens of billions of dollars, where it's like you just think, and that's that whole thing where it's like that car ride from your house to Salem would just be the most anxiety-filled trip of your life. You would just be waiting for the logging truck to come by and crush you into a paste.
And so afraid that I'd like spill coffee on it or accidentally tear it in half when I'm because you've seen me do. I mean, hell, you saw me. I think you were here that one day when I like had a paycheck and I couldn't get the envelope opened because it had been taped, and I end up ripping the entire thing, including the check, in half. So it's like I'd be afraid to be trusted with the $200 million lottery ticket. I'd be afraid.
We should do this. We should take a break. We'll come back on the other side. We've got listener Jenny and listener Rob going to join us in the studio in just a bit. Also, Hick Watch coming up, Penis Watch, and later on, clue number 2 in the E.H. Vending Name That Snack Contest for this week. Stay right there. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Strange for a girl like
Listening to the Emerson News Network.
Get the rocks in the box, get the water right down to your socks. This bulkhead's built of fallen brethren bones. We all do what we can, we endure our fellow man, and we sing our songs to the head frames, kicks and moan. And it's 1, 2, 3 on the wrong side of the lee. What were you meant for? What were you meant for? And it's 7, 8, 9, you get your shuffle back in line, and if you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again. If you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again. And you won't make a dime on this gray granite mountain mine. Of dirt you're made, and the dirt you will return. So while we're living here, let's get this little one thing clear. There's plenty of men to die, you don't jump your turn. And it's 1, 2, 3 on the wrong side of the lead. What were you meant for? What were you meant for? And it's 7, 8, 9, you get your shuffle back in line. And if you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again. And if you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again. Make it to 10, you won't make it again. And if you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again. And if you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com or Dawn, D-A-W-N, @rickemerson.com. In just a moment, we will be joined by listeners Jenny and Rob as we apparently just spike the ball and drive up the score as high as is humanly possible in order to sap the remaining life force of Aaron Duran and his band of hopeless boobs as they endeavor to compete. And compete is used in only the most loose and elastic sense.
Collateral damage, man. They should have known what they were in for when they signed on for this. I mean, what were they thinking?
See, now I can say that I'm just following your lead in showing no mercy and giving no quarter.
Well, yeah, and in this case too, it's not that we're trying to crush them. We can really just kind of look at them with sad pity.
It's that the crushing can't be helped.
Right.
Is that there's just nothing to be done about it.
They never stood a chance, really.
I had something else I was going to say that seemed terribly important, but now it just sort of seems... Oh, somebody said that I never explained the... This is actually not nearly as interesting, I think, as I made it sound, but somebody said I never explained the business of the dogs and the supermodels and the whatever. I just had this I don't even want to say it was a bad morning. It was just a strange morning because we were taping Outlook Portland, and the episode we were taping this morning was for Dove Lewis does this thing every year called Boutiques Unleashed, which is a dual fashion show. It's a fashion show for dogs and their owners, and where our friend Seth Aaron actually does. He designs. They have a mystery animal that they unveil every year as one of the draws. I think last year it was a rabbit, but I think the year before that it was a llama. I think the year before that it was a goat, a therapy goat named Gracie. So, which apparently was raised in a house where it slept in a bed with its owners. So it's all very strange. But they do this. But they do this fundraiser every year that's like a dual fashion show for dogs and their owners and whatever. So I think this is the third year that we've actually done an Outlook Portland about this. And I showed up this morning, and it was like I got to the parking lot a couple minutes late, and it was that thing where Cheryl was actually standing outside the studio, clearly waiting for me, and sort of giving me that look like get in here now. And somebody had not there was some sort of miscommunication somewhere where, normally it's me and, a guest, or normally, me and maybe two guests. I think last year maybe two guests and a dog, something like that. So I walked in this morning. There were, I think, seven dogs. There were four of the runway models. There were, I think, five other people that were from some local fabricorium or something that was doing some of the designing. And then there was just a whole other platoon of people that were bringing in 12 different mannequins that they were festooning the set with. None of which we'd really been apprised of. They had never really we hadn't really gotten the heads up about that. So there are going to be several photos that'll be posted later on, because Cheryl, there was sort of the snapping action was happening all morning of me just sitting there with at the desk with my head in my hands, or at one point flanked by, I think, two small dogs, each of which is wearing a sort of purple and green bib, and just sort of looking out sadly at the world and wondering what it is. So when you got that message from me this morning, where I just sounded a little bit frazzled, and I said, I'm running a little bit late, I don't know when I'll be there, just do all the news yourself. Gonna be there, be behind schedule. So that is what that was about. So you'll be able to see that in it. I'm sure it'll look better than it seemed. It was just and then we had to do the opening sequence multiple times because I had to, I do the opening where I say, I'm Rick Emerson coming up today on Outlook, and I do this thing where I'm holding a dog whose name I believe is Twinkie, and it's this. So it's already just the gayest thing ever because I'm holding this tiny. It's like a little pocket dog. In a sort of a pink tea cozy sort of a thing, that then has rhinestones and bedazzled spangle things all over. And I'm doing the intro, but apparently every time I hold the dog, I am doing so in a way that makes it look as though I am choking the dog to death. And Cheryl kept giving me a whole and she kept miming shaking her head over at me, and I couldn't tell what the hell she was doing. And then she showed me one of the photos, and she said, look at this. And I swear, it does for all the world look like I am throttling the dog on live television. So anyway, if you should happen to see something like that on the internet, that's not – it is not as it appears.
You're not actually choking the pocket dog.
I'm really not. All right.
In any sense of that phrase.
No, I'm not done. Yeah. It's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Listeners Jenny and Rob joining us now. Hello, how are you guys?
Hello, we are good.
I'm great.
Before we do anything else, we should say happy birthday to Jenny.
Hooray, thank you.
You're what, 21, 22 this year?
You know what? The way I look at birthdays is that the alternative is death. So you should just embrace everyone. That's, I don't know, corny maybe, but.
Well, you.
So I'm happy to be getting older every year.
Well, the last time you were on the show, you were doing the Pearl Jam list. And you talked about having the cancer, which
yeah.
I don't know. None of my business, or whatever. I think you mentioned this, but is it in remission or is it gone or is it just one of those things where they got to do it, like a spot check and every
gone.
Now and again?
It's gone, but I still go every 6 months.
And is that – and I don't mean to dwell on the cancer stuff right out of the gate, but you said something very similar to this when you were on last time. You said that every birthday is sort of the air is sweeter and the birds are – you know, the bird's song is brighter because of that. But so when they say remission, like I don't know what that means. Is that just sort of like it's skulking around somewhere but they can't find it?
You know, it can mean that, yeah. And especially because I had a blood cancer, you know, you can imagine like a cancer cell on a blood cell. Like how tiny is that? I don't think our minds can even imagine how tiny that is. So, I mean, it could be that it's there and that my immune system is already kind of beating it up and taking care of it. And it just kind of waits to see like an opportunity to come back, you know.
When you have some sort of an illness like that and they're talking about, you know, like your white blood cell count or your T cell count or whatever it is, do you do the whole thing? Do you visualize your immune system on the attack like some sort of platoon of Patton soldiers, you know, or just, you know, like a squadron of TIE fighters just screaming across the horizon to do battle?
Well, it's actually because of the kind of cancer that I had. It was a cancer of the white blood cells. It was more like Keystone Cops because it's a proliferation of white blood cells that all kind of do their job half fast. And so
they're arresting the wrong guy and putting
him in. That's kind of what it's like. They attack.
Leaving
like,
the key on a hook right outside the bars.
They attack all the wrong things and do all the wrong things that they should do so that really my immune system is.
You're filled with a station house of fifes.
Yeah. It's really crazy.
Excellent. Well,
it does make every year a little bit better. And, you know, I kind of feel like I had a friend, Rob and I were talking about this. Or maybe it was I talking to you? I don't remember.
We'll say it is.
When I was saying that, you know, my friends that asked me, you know, is this your midlife crisis? All this craziness, you know, of all the things that you do and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, it could be. And my friend said, well, why don't you just get a Harley and have a threesome? Because it'd be so much cheaper. But I'm just like, well, actually, that would be less fun for me, actually, because that's over so much more quickly.
Well, I suppose that's up. Dawn?
I got nothing.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, if somebody didn't know better, he would suspect that Jenny is a little drunk right now.
I've only had two beers. I'm very good.
I can vouch for her.
Well, average.
We've got a bottle of bourbon. You know what it is?
I'm not at work, and so I'm very loose today.
I was actually going to ask if that's the other thing, where it's like you just, you know, either because you know you've faced some sort of adversity and you've gone through it, or you just hit, you know, other people you hit a certain point in your life where it's, you know, like you know people say, are you having a second beer for lunch? You just go, yes, I am, and there's just sort of, you know, like, what do you know, who cares, and just everybody else can kind of
What are you going to get mad at me?
Seriously?
Okay. Well,
you know, because Patrick almost died, Dawn.
Yes.
So I mean, really.
Yes.
Let's talk about the Sleep Country Foster Kids Pajama Bowl, which is happening this Sunday, Sunday, March 13th. If you want to find out more details about this, you can go to rickemersonshow.com. I also posted it on Facebook, and I think you can actually just go to sleepcountry.com, and they'll sort of circuitously link you to it. But you go to rickemersonshow.com, there's a link. And so what year is this that like some version of this team has existed?
This is the third year that we've been together as a team, and it's back to the original band, too.
Yeah, I was joking at lunch. I'm like, Ringo, we're putting the band back together.
Because this is because the first year was when I was in – that was the year that I was in Vegas.
That's right, yeah.
And that was when – not to repeat a theme here, but that's when Jenny was drunk and bowled a spectacular game.
Like 272?
Yeah, I don't remember.
Were you tempted to just retire just to sort of, you know.
It was seven
You're
strikes.
Really, I'm done now. It's fine.
And so that was the first year, and then I can only track this by dint of the pajamas that I wore. So was that when we ended up going to Henry's or something?
You had to go to lunch with us because you were in Vegas.
That's
during
right.
The pajama bowl.
And I ended up wearing I think Sarah's teddy bear pajamas or something like that.
That's right. Yep.
And then last year, Dawn, that was the year that you went, and we had the mall nachos, and I was wearing I think Frog Cupid pajamas or something like that.
Yes, yes, and yes, and Jenny's husband bought the largest platter of nachos we have ever seen.
They really are. Here's the thing: like the number of times that those nachos have been referenced in subsequent months, it's like cannot even be calculated. I mean, they are the standard. they are the definitive example by which all nachos have been.
And if that's not a reason to get people out of their house on a Sunday and come down and see us bowl our way into victory and see the mall of nachos, I don't know what else we can give you.
My other, the other thing I enjoyed the most, really. About last year's Pajama Bowl is that you guys were, you know, hoisting a few beers while you were drinking. And Jenny, you got a mouth on you like a sailor. You really do. And you guys were bowling right next to the team from The Fish.
Which is awesome.
I'm sure they prayed for us.
Well, because there's a – now, can you go online and see where you rank against, like, other teams like as you go along? Or do you have to wait until the end and then they tell you who the sort of winner is?
Well, financially, right now, you can go and see how much money the team has raised. And,
where would that be right now as of your last checking?
The last time we checked, Jenny.
Here, I've got into my notes, which I kind of feel this is shameful. So I don't know. I feel that we should be worthy of so much more. But as of this morning, it was only $670. And I feel like...
Now, where does that contrast? Give us an example. Do you know where some of the other stations are?
Oh, my God. Do you want me to tell you what the number one is? We talked about this. It's like $1,600 is what the number one team is. We're nowhere near even close to them.
Who might the number one team be?
Oh, you know what? I don't even remember.
But because I think you sent me an email, you were noting that we had surpassed any number of terrestrial radio outlets,
yes.
But that there were still miles to go before we sleep, though. So we'll say first and foremost, before we do anything else, if you want to donate or if you want to find out more about it, you go to rickemersonshow.com. That is rickemersonshow.com. And the money goes to benefit foster child programs here in Portland and in the Northwest. So you can donate and find out more by going to rickemersonshow.com. Is this the first year that – now, have they done the two different locations before? Is this the first year that they've sent people to Beaverton?
First year, yeah. It's first year that this Big Al's in Beaverton is there. So,
I find it really wrong. See, I almost – don't you feel like we ought to just demand that they switch Aaron's team with somebody else?
Yeah.
That they just send some other group of saps to Beaverton because we're going to be in Vancouver again,
well,
right?
Well, listen up. We might have some exciting news, which I'll let Rob reveal
breaking
right now.
News, yeah.
Breaking news.
What is the exciting news?
Well, we just found out we had the opportunity to switch, and so we're going to be in Beaverton at 11 o'clock.
All
on
right.
Sunday.
So is this the same time of day when Aaron's team is?
That we don't know, but we're really excited. In some ways, we're hoping to be on at the same time, and other we're wanting to be able to heckle them when they bowl at 2 o'clock. So we don't know.
If you're there at a different time, you can't smell the you can't smell the sweet aroma of their tears.
And I can't buy them beers until they can no longer throw a ball.
That's what I'm saying. So
and people should know there is something in this for us. I mean, because granted, yes, we are doing a good cause. It's a good cause. We're raising money for kids. But at the same time, the more money we raise, the more points we get. The better we bowl, the more points we get. Mm-hmm. Everybody being in like theme costume, the more points you get. The team that wins gets like everybody on the team gets a Beautyrest mattress. And they've also got a new prize from Clear Channel. But that if anybody bowls...
Even sweeter, if you ask me.
Somebody bowls two perfect games, they win $25,000 in cash.
All right.
Oh, sweet fancy Moses.
So everybody needs to be buckling down and practicing like right now. All right. Well, so we'll talk more about that here in just a bit. We'll also – got a whole pile of things to get to. Are you guys on a schedule or are you just –
we're
already drinking in the middle of the day.
No, it's my birthday.
All right.
If you want more to drink, I think there's some stuff in the fridge over there in the corner. So I'm just saying.
Dawn is in her own masterfully subtle way trying to trying to have the booze brought over to the table.
I am
is
not.
Is that true, Dawn?
No,
Taylor?
No, because I am now going for that delicate balance of cold medicine and Vizo.
Really?
Yes.
So you're not gonna augment it with alcohol as well.
No, if I add alcohol to that, everything will just go horribly, horribly.
Well, how
awry.
Do you know that that's true?
That's
I mean,
not
really?
True,
did it come
sure.
to you in a dream?
Have we forgotten the Four Loko day?
No,
I mean,
but I'm
really.
Just saying, you know, but you're never going to learn to handle your combination of caffeine and cold medicine and bourbon if you don't, you know, if you don't expose yourself to it daily.
Dawn, you're embarrassing women everywhere.
It is the International Day of the Woman, Dawn.
Oh,
I mean, come on, really? I mean,
we don't have any clean shot glasses.
Where is your? I'll go clean. I think we've just got those plastic cups and that strange mug that has the green M&M on the side of it. I'll go give it a good scouring during the break, though.
No, all right.
All right. At the news desk, here is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Let's do our Hick Watch.
Here is your Hick Watch for Tuesday. Yes, Tuesday, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Yeah, right there we go.
Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Copenhagen, the way I know it should. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering all around the house. That Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Oh, yeah.
Oh, by the way, just, okay, I am now obliged to mention this. So that, Cheryl just messaged me moments ago, and she says, Aaron's team, by the way, now has $300, and then Cheryl gives us permission to crush them beyond repair and rehabilitation now. So there you go. So now that they see, now that they have $300, now we can feel good about going forth full speed.
And if you're listening to this, by the way, you can donate small little amounts. You could just kick like $5.
Well, and that's what I kind of said to Rick. I'm like, you know, think about, I know everyone doesn't love Obama, but I mean, come on. You know, he really kind of grew so much on in his campaign about like the little small donations.
Think of Howard Dean, won't you?
Yeah. Maybe even better to Howard, but you know, $5 helps.
Oh, see, and now, okay, see, this is how quick, this is how quickly the worm turns. Yesterday, Aaron was on here, she's crying like a woman, just lamenting the shoddy state of financial affairs over his team. Now he's issuing threats to me. Now I'm down, now Keelan and Aaron are just, they're taunting me via, taunting me via text. Just coming in hand over fist. All right.
Well, he's only afraid now that we're going to be taking the fight to him in Beaverton.
I was going
to
say, now it's
kind
to
of
the
a
mattresses.
Pansy.
All right. here is Dawn Taylor with your Hick Watch.
An intoxicated, naked Florida woman.
Awesome. Where?
Florida.
Fantastic.
Threw stones at people and her teeth into a canal on Saturday night. Deputies responded to a call of a woman who was drunk, naked, throwing rocks at people and calling them names in the Bayshore area of Naples around 8 p.m. on Saturday. When they arrived on Mango Drive, deputies found Tina Belinda Masta, 46, sitting on the dock near her home with a blanket wrapped around her. Masta then turned toward the deputies, took off her blanket, and exposed herself to them. She had taken some of her teeth out and thrown them into the canal.
Some of her teeth. her teeth come out a la carte.
According to deputies, Masta, quote, kept picking at her teeth and asked to use some pliers.
Oh, wait, hold. So these aren't false teeth. These aren't.
No, apparently these are her actual teeth.
Okay, so the phrase took some of her teeth out, it just has a whole separate meaning now. So she was. Wait, hold on a second. But if she had already taken some of her – I'm trying to picture this. If she had already taken some of her teeth out and then she stopped and asked for pliers, that implies that some of the teeth – the previous removal of the teeth had been accomplished without the aid of pliers or any other tool so that
she
was either
pulling –
she got
all the loose ones and
– she was pulling real hard or the teeth are real loose to begin with.
Yeah.
Or there's just a lot of – or there's – okay.
Witnesses said, the male deputy helped dress Masta as best he could. Witnesses said Masta cursed at three men, threw rocks at them, pulled her clothes off, and threatened to beat them up. She then tried to break a light and a wooden fence.
You know, the thing.
Deputy said Masta smelled of alcohol.
Uh-huh. See what your midday drinking leads to, Jenny. See the path that you've put yourself on.
Where's the pliers?
She's probably on cold medicine.
The thing about it is, I mean, somebody who is able and or willing to pull out their own teeth is, of course, the last person on earth you want to see exposing themselves to you. I mean, even back when I thought it was just like removing her upper plate or something, I figured that was going to be unpleasant. But I mean, just
there's a picture of her, by the way.
Oh!
Yeah.
Oh.
She's kind of leathery.
She looks like, I mean, she kind of has, is it?
Leathery.
She's like a troll doll or something.
Yeah.
That's sort of what she looks like. She has the sort of.
At least she has the presence of mind to pose for her mugshot with her mouth closed.
Yes.
Probably be like all bloody and gaping. And
God damn.
Thank you for crystallizing that thought. Thank you for elaborating on that, Jenny.
Have you guys ever eaten at the – and look, don't get me wrong. I really love – I love me a tacky, trashy restaurant every now and again. It's not like I'm a man of refined and cultured taste or something. But have you guys ever eaten at the TikTok on 82nd?
No, I've driven by it, though, and thought, my, that looks like a fine establishment.
It really – well, I mean, it is what it is, you know, and it occupies a certain niche. I mean, if you – you know, it's a bar on 82nd. I mean, you know, what do you want? And it also has – it's sort of a bar married to kind of a – like a poor man sort of Denny's. So I go there every now and again, like not all that often. And here's the great thing about the TikTok is the TikTok, you get a little free entertainment, too, depending on which way you're facing. Because it's right next to one of those hotels or those motels that rents by the hour, and where it still has like the old ass like peeling wooden sign that says color TVs in the room and like the weird sort of like off kilter 60s font or something, and you just see like a lot of scabbed up people kind of like shuffling in and out with Kleenex boxes on their feet. So I mean, it really is like it is just like a glorious window into a certain. It's like looking into a horrible full size human snow globe, But I have been at the TikTok, I don't know, maybe a handful of times over the last, I don't know, a couple of years, maybe 5 or 6 times. Twice, not just once, twice I have been sitting – and 2 different people. It wasn't even the same guy. Twice I've been at the TikTok and I'm sitting there and I'm trying to eat my, you know, my greased up whatever. And there's a guy sitting across from me and it's always the same 3-step process. Begins to eat his, you know – his like hush puppies and gruel, realizes it's not working out the way he wants, stops and then removes one of his plates, you know, from and then just sets it down on the table, then just resumes eating again. And it's like there's just no going back to your food after that. There's no – I mean, I don't care how good whatever it is the waitress brought me. There's no resuming the eating after you witness that. So I'm just – you know, like that's a caveat emptor.
I have sent off the photo of the tooth-throwing woman to be
that's
uploaded.
Great.
In case people want to get a look at her troll hair.
That's awesome.
Leathery skin.
Okay. There's your Hick Watch for me.
Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Copenhagen, the way I know it should. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering all around the house. That Copenhagen makes me feel so good. How about you?
All right, so what amount were we at just moments ago when you gave us the when you read the tote board?
670.
All right, so we're now at 695.
Woo-hoo!
So that is $25 that is coming just within the last 2-3 minutes. So there
Thank
you go.
Thank you, friends.
Again, you can do that at rickemersonshow.com. It is rickemersonshow.com. We got 2 things that I got to get taken care of sometime in the immediate future. But before we do that, we should resume with the news if you have more,
because we've
gotten so little of that. I mean, it's just sort of stacking up everywhere.
A top Idaho Republican lawmaker was injured this weekend in a farming accident. Representative Scott Bedke of Oakley, Idaho, a top Republican lawmaker in the state, was injured in a weekend farming accident and recovering in the Cassia Regional Medical Center in Burley.
This involved a combine.
It involved...
threshing machine. Hay baler.
We're close. Hay bales.
Okay.
He was loading a truck with oat hay to feed his cattle when a bale weighing an estimated 1,500 pounds rolled onto him and the tractor he was driving. Representative Fred Wood, a friend and former physician, saw Bedke and his family Sunday morning, said his brother seemed to think the bale broke prior to actually hitting Scott on the tractor. It actually kind of hit him from the top and behind and smashed his chest into the steering, which is where his injuries to the chest came from.
Are nuances of this variety really important when it comes to a guy being crushed by a bale of hay?
Apparently so.
Does it matter from what direction the hay bale arrived? Okay.
So Representative Woody said other House leaders have spoken with Bedke to make sure his absence wouldn't affect important discussions, in Idaho.
I don't care what it is you accomplish in your life. If you just end up being taken out by a bale of grass, I mean, that's just, you know, it's not how you want to end your life. It's just it's a bad way to wrap things.
No. So there you go. We have a rather unique penis watch.
Fantastic.
By the way.
Here's your penis watch for. Jenny, it was your daughter that asked about the return of the penis watch when the show came back on the air.
Yeah, she was really excited. And then, I mentioned this before. I'll let you do that. I'm sorry.
No, tell me.
She and my husband were out doing something. We were listening to the show, like on a podcast, and she bust through the door, kind of all like sporting the jazz hands, going, take a look at my enormous penis. And like, if you could picture her, she's like a little skinny blonde doll. I mean, And, I had to try and put the serious face on, like, that was not acceptable. But I know it's already too late.
Was there mixed company? Was there
No, it was just her and Adam.
Okay. Is this a thing that – I mean, are you counting down the days until this happens while you're, like, bring a dinner party of some kind?
I wouldn't care.
Or you get the note sent home from school.
I know. Please tell Thea to quit talking about penises. Yeah, that'll happen.
Okay. Here's your
look at my enormous penis, and my troubles start a melting away. I take a look at my enormous penis, and everything is going my way.
There is Dawn Taylor. Oh, by the way, that $25. That $25 was from Mr. Thomas Gill, who donated.
Thank you, Thomas.
Good job, Thomas.
Despite the casual indifference with which Don threw aside his knowledge earlier on the day.
I did not. I said he has a huge noggin the size of a medicine ball.
Yes.
Uh-huh. That was a compliment.
Okay. Here's Don Taylor.
And by noggin, I meant brain. Anyway, a circus dwarf who pulls appliances with his penis won't be performing at an upcoming Oxford University College ball. However, school officials put the kibosh on the plans, deeming the act unsuitable for the ball. The decision angered Demon Dan, otherwise known as Daniel Blackner, who said, "I have a brilliant resume after including being featured as an Ewok in a Star Wars film and various Muppet movies as a flying teddy bear."
What do you mean he pulls appliances with his penis?
He drags a vacuum cleaner using only his genitals.
But I mean, is that
He tours with a sort of a Jim Rose sideshow kind of a group called
Is that like the
Circus of Horrors?
Is that of horrors?
Horrors.
Okay. Horrors. I couldn't quite tell which. I mean, is that like the quarter who can pick up the stripper who can pick up a quarter off the stage, or is it like, or is there a ring of or like a hook of some kind involved here?
I'm assuming there must be clips or hooks involved.
It's not just like an elephant. It's not just like an elephant picking up a bundle of straw.
I don't think it's prehensile.
Okay. Rob is shifting in his seat uncomfortably.
Well, I'm just saying, years ago back. So this is the actual Jim Rose, not like a Jim Rose sort of.
No, this is a similar sort of thing. It's called Circus of Horrors. They've been touring for 15 years, and they warn their gothic style horror shows are not for sissies or for those of a nervous disposition.
Seriously, let me just tell you this: has anybody here actually seen the Jim Rose Circus sideshow in person?
Yeah.
Boy, it was because they had their zenith, sort of their apexes during the Lollapalooza era, like in the mid 90s, because they in fact toured with Lollapalooza, and then they did they toured with. And it wasn't Marilyn Manson, but it was somebody like that. It was some sort of, it's like Danzig or somebody had them and then had them open, and then they came to Spokane. It was the Jim Rose Circus Sideshow came to Spokane with this band called the Jenna Torturers, and I believe that show climaxed with like a guy pounding nails through his schlong on stage, like into a 2x4. So it was all very off putting. But I remember seeing the Jim Rose Circus Sideshow, and not only was the what's his name Mr. Lifto. Who would just like hoist things off the ground with his tool, but
with his nipples
and with his nipples and his tongue. That's the one. See, and the thing about it is it's like the penis lifting. That was the thing he had to do behind a curtain. There was some sort of like, and I guess it varies from town to town, but they had like a scrim sort of so you could see his silhouette. And I think it was like he had a ring of some kind. It was like maybe what is it? The Prince Albert, is that the ring that's through the end of it there?
Yeah.
And it was like there was that. And then it was like sort of, you know, it was like you're going to be pulling a snowmobile out of a bank somewhere. You just, you know, it's like you just put like a tow chain on it, and then it was like they would just stand him on a chair, and it was like fishing off a really really high pier. Basically, they would stand him in a chair, and then they would just hang a successively heavier selection of items at the end of the chain, and then he would just sort of do like a. Sort of like an inhale flex, and they would lift. And it was just – it was so unbelievably uncomfortable. Not just – see, and it's not just because of the pain. Like you're thinking, wow, that must hurt, or hey, why am I watching this? But just because you just wonder if you're going to be there at this sort of like Hindenburg-esque performance where it's like some guy backstage, like it's his first day or he's all liquored up on Robo or something, and he just – you know, he picks up the 15 instead of the 5, and then it's
– Do you picture like that – remember the skit on Saturday Night Live where – Phil Hartman did the thing where he was the weightlifter and his arms ripped off.
Oh, at the old
all steroids.
Yeah, at the old drug Olympics. Yeah, where he's like trying to deadlift 12,000 pounds and he's
his arms are just staying there like bloody stubs.
I just pictured it happening like one of those like if you're if you've actually ever used one of these things to tow cars, they actually have a thing that's like basically like a huge thick bungee cord. But the deal is you're supposed to hang a towel or something or a blanket over the center of it because occasionally it'll just snap and you don't want it to snap all the way back and like shatter your windshield. And so I was sort of picturing something like that happening. By the way, that was immediately prior to the section of the Jim Rose Circus Sideshow performance where a guy would drink a variety of liquids such as beer, water, and Pepto-Bismol and then vomit back up the liquid of your choice.
Yeah. When I saw him, thankfully they didn't have that guy doing stuff. But I know that the Enigma would do this thing where he had I don't even know there, but they're these long, almost like fiber optic, like tubes with light bulbs in the ends of it. And he would thread it up his nose and all the way back down and out his mouth, and then open his mouth and the flashlight would come out of his mouth. And that really bothered me. Actually, the most disturbing thing for me, I saw him at the Roseland, and when somebody started eating fire, and it was standing room only in the Roseland, and I just thought, man, we're all doomed.
This is going to end badly.
Yeah, this place will just go up like a stack of matches, you know, one wrong move.
All right, so he pulls – the dwarf pulls appliances with his penis.
Right. And the Circus of Horrors was going to was booked for a performance at Oxford University at their college ball. And a spokesman said that it was deemed unsuitable. The creator of the Circus Horror, known only as Dr. Hayes, said, "It is ridiculous for the dean to try and decide what people should or should not see."
How is it that you discover that you have a skill, like a facility for pulling, you know, like a stove or a kettle drum or something behind your penis? I mean, what are the interstitial steps between not knowing you can do that and then, hey, I'm on stage doing that?
Well, like, from reading, did you ever read Jim Rose's book?
No, I did not.
I guess it's one of those things that you start, like with him, he started juggling and doing stuff on the boardwalk in Venice, and then he started looking at people who did freak show stuff and learned how to do a couple of things like chew glass and stuff, and then realized there was a whole sort of a subculture and an entire culture to it. And he started studying the techniques of how to do these things, like driving the nail up your nose and eat the glass and lay on beds of nails and things, and gradually learned how to do these things. So I assume it's a similar thing. You got a freaky circus. You got a midget. Midget is doing stuff with the circus. Then one day midget goes, you know, I could probably make a little extra money if I could do something weird. Maybe I could pull things with my penis.
Then go right for the penis. All right. Fair enough. There's your penis watch for
Tuesday. Take a look at my enormous penis. And my troubles start a-melting away. Bow, bow, I take bow. A look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way.
It is the... It's the Rick Emerson radio program. I wanted to mention this while you're all here because we were just talking about the TikTok and about the rather interesting motel that lurks directly across the way. So I'm going to be out of town for a little while next week. I'm going to be going to New York, and I kind of told all the sort of the evolutions of the story, which is that originally it was going to be Lara and myself both going to New York, and then I think she kind of quickly came to the conclusion that wasn't going to be a lot of fun because I'm kind of a jerk most of the time, and I'm difficult to travel with or spend like extended periods of time with, especially if I'm sort of like if I'm in work mode, I can be a little unpleasant to be around. So she just kind of pulled the ripcord and said, "Well, you know, you just." I'm going to go to New York just by myself, but then in exchange for that, I have agreed in advance to go on an actual vacation with her somewhere else, like before the end of the year. So at some point before the end of 2011, like I'm going to go somewhere else. So I'm going to New York, and I said, okay, well, you know, I'll book the plane, and I'll get that all taken care of. And she said, I'll book your hotel. Don't worry about it, because she actually, you know, she's the one who usually takes care of most of our travel plans. So I got the plane ticket taken care of, so it would all just be locked in. She assured me that she would. That she would take care of the hotel and just send me all the information, all the details on the itinerary when it was taken care of. I have now I probably shouldn't give the name of the hotel, although it wouldn't be too difficult to find if you just search some of the comments that have been left here at the Expedia entry for this. I'll just Don, I'm just going to hand you one of these. These are just randomly. I have not gone through and cherry picked these. These are just random observations and comments given about this hotel, which, by the way, is in Manhattan and was $52 a night.
So is she paying you back for something? That's what it kind of sounds like.
I
don't blame her, but.
I think there's I think there's a little bit of punishment being visited upon me because I was opting to make it a business oriented trip.
Yeah, like a traveler from London said, it was okay. The pictures are fake for me. I was not happy with the rooms and the overall condition of the hotel.
This says this one actually in all caps. The review just says no, 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 no. And then immediately below it, someone follows up with an all-caps posting that says, safety, safety, safety. Safety is the biggest issue here. I'm no snob, but I don't like to fear for my life while I'm on vacation, says this man from Oakland.
Oakland.
There are enough stresses that come with traveling without having to worry about your belongings or your physical health. Some of the reviews that recommend this hotel just say, sleep there and stay out in the city awake the rest of the time. That may work for some, but what about your belongings? You have to leave the room at some point. Do not go to this place. Immediately below that is a review that just says, it is okay for me. I am a Chinese. I swear to God.
Well, here we got one where somebody actually recommends it, and within his recommendation says, I can't say it was the most sanitary hotel I have ever seen.
That's great.
But for a college kid backpacking to New York City, it suited me all right.
How about this one? This traveler says, the headline is disgusting. This hotel was revolting. The stench is unbearable. Also, there are no bathrooms and the rooms aren't clean. Also, the staff is not polite. And then he adds, do not stay here.
Well, so if there's no bathrooms, I think we're kind of figuring out why there's a stench,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think that may be, I think we may have sussed all of that out. This one just says, hotel break-in. Do not stay here. Followed by 9 exclamation marks. The rest of the review is written in all caps. This hotel was filthy. We had poor services and many noise disturbances. At 4:30 a.m. the first night, someone tried to kick in our door. Only the deadbolt kept them out. There is no security whatsoever at this hotel. Unless you want to fear for your life or go to jail for shooting intruders, do not stay here. And then a second time, do not stay here.
A traveler from Moscow, Russia, does not recommend this hotel, remarking, it was rather cold
from
in the room.
From Moscow. I found the chill unbearable. Let's see.
But there was no nuclear fallout. That's probably a plus, right?
This hotel is a creepy rabbit warren of narrow of narrow corridors, tiny rooms, shared bathrooms, peeling paint, filthy carpeting, scary elevators. It is entirely creepy. Please do not stay here. Please. This just says...
Maybe your wife, after coming back from, like, backpacking through India, thinks this looks lush.
This is the worst experience I have ever had in my life, says this traveler from San Diego, California. This is very bad hotel. It seems no maintenance 1,000 years. how about this one? This is just a one-sentence review. Just says, saw mouse everywhere.
Say mouse.
That makes me think it's like that place that Sylvester and Porky Pig stay at, where the mice are dropping the bowling ball or the butcher thing on me. Let's see. What else do we have? I'll just read a few more. By the way, and you're my witness. I'm not making any of these up.
No, you're not.
You can go to Expedia and you can read all about this hotel, which again is in Manhattan, and which is and here's the thing. And it actually says from $75 a night. It wasn't. It was $54 for this. And I mean, that's where I should have figured it out right there. I mean, anyway, this says this is not an hotel. We booked for 2 nights, 2 rooms, but after first terrible night, we went right out to look for real hotel. Has no basic condition that hotel requires. Also, it was one-star hotel. I really appreciate refund because this is not a place where a person can wash himself and stay in a dignified way. You have the risk to get some disease here. Probably a control. This is a person from Atlanta, by the way. Probably a control by the competent authority should close that place. Let's see. Another worst experience I have ever had. And then I'm satisfied. This hotel was great for the price.
Well, on the sheet of paper that you handed to Don, it says, just fine.
Yeah. God damn.
I think I stayed there in 2006.
Wow. This just says, probably not what you are expecting. I would not call this place a hotel. Everything is run down, has been neglected for many years. Roaches everywhere, smell of roach spray, yet still roaches. Your mother would never let you stay in this hotel. Bring sandals if you plan to shower.
So, that sounds relaxing.
There you go. So my Facebook postings will be colorful, I would imagine, at the very least when I'm in New York. We'll take a brief break. We'll come back on the other side. What else looms on the horizon for the good people, Don? Have we done our watch? Have we done both our watches?
We did
both our
watches.
Or do we have a third watch still coming up?
Nope, we did both our watches.
All right. So we've got the clue number two for this week's EH Vending Name That Snack Contest on the horizon. Let me just see. So we've got people saying that people are going to the website. They are asking if you answered this before. Somebody said, what amounts can I donate? And you noted that it's, it's like $5, $10, whatever.
I think it auto kind of populates where you can click buttons for $25, $50, $100. I mean, I'm...
And then there's another, I think.
Yeah, and then that's when you do like your $5. I mean, it all adds up.
Is this a thing where, I mean, because I don't think I've ever actually had to bowl. I think I've successfully avoided the bowling portion of this all three years. So am I going to be obliged to wear sleepwear of some kind this year?
Well, don't you think it's kind of the fun of it, really?
I suppose.
Maybe not, but.
I suppose it depends on who you are.
I know.
We have a full catalog of bowlers? Because you had mentioned, I think you said something about, was it Scott was going to to absent himself?
Oh, he's ill today.
Yeah.
We're hoping that he will be back in bowling form by this Sunday.
And I mean, no offense, I don't want to bowl with you, Rick. You're too competitive.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing is, I just wouldn't.
You get all crabby and weird.
Yeah, I wouldn't have any. Wait a minute.
You've said it yourself.
No, it's fine. It is one of those things. It is one of those things, not like trivia nights or like that on-flight question answering thing in the airplanes that I can't do anymore because I just get all bent out, or crosswords I get all bent out of shape about. Let's see. One other thing before we take a break. You reminded me of this, Dawn, because I put up a Facebook posting and a Twitter thing about this last night, and then it completely fell out of my brain this morning with all the dogs and the models and the taking my life in my hands, going to this hotel and everything. That yesterday, out of the blue, with no warning at all and with no real explanation, so Rocco Pizza, which has been I don't know if it's actually considered iconic or by most people. It certainly is by me because it's been there for 20 years. It's been been a catty corner from Powell's on Burnside. It is 20 yards away from Burnside. It's from Powell's on Burnside. It's directly across the street, and it's been there for I think either 18 or 19 years. And there was no – I was just there last week. There was no warning whatsoever given, but I got a message from somebody last night that said that it closed. And there was no – it doesn't really seem to be any sort of backstory about that. And so people have been asking me if the bar – because the thing is they expanded it. There was the Rocco's Pizza, and then they opened a bar of the same name next door, which is sort of like an adjunct, which is – the only difference was I think you could actually order liquor there. But that is closed as well, and there was like no sort of warning or overture given for that. It was just – it was open, and then they just shut it up last night, and that is the end of that. So we're going to talk to Kelly Clark from Willamette Week about that tomorrow, which I believe will be her last appearance on the show before she goes on maternity leave.
That's right. So, she's pregnant.
Yeah. So, she will be joining us tomorrow, after which it'll be I don't know how long maternity leave is.
I think they say 6 weeks, but you get 12 by law, but you don't get paid for 12.
Is that true? So it's like they just can't – you can take 12 without them firing you.
Right.
Or something. Let me ask you this. You have the one child?
That's plenty.
So I was going to ask, actually, how long after – I mean, I know you love your daughter and all. At what point after having the child are you just longing for some time, with grown-ups, like away from the baby? I mean, it might be months, but
I intentionally didn't breastfeed because I wanted to have a beer. I'm that kind of mother.
It's a mother's love.
Yeah. But we knew right away we were only going to have one. And then, she was still all swaddled. And I was like, Oh, boy, I've got to have some adult conversation.
So Kelly will be making her last appearance on the show tomorrow, and we'll talk about a whole series of things, including the closing of Rocco's Pizza. So that is tomorrow on the Rick Emerson Radio program. We'll take a break, come back after this. Don't go anywhere. We return momentarily.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio program brought to you by, among other folks, our fine friends at Squires Electric. Find out more about them at squireselectric.com, or you can call 252-1609. That is 503-252-1609. And I just have to say, moments ago, so Rob and Jenny, you're here, and you were just, I couldn't tell if it was a thing you were actually doing or if you were just sort of miming this as a gag. One of you was doing the thing that the mom always does, which is where she gets a piece of, you know, like a, she gets like a tissue or Kleenex and then daubs it on her tongue and then uses it to wipe something off of your face.
Well, she asked me if I needed to go potty, and so I checked to make sure that her bangs were
there. Really was. And I'm not, you know, I'm not implying there's some sort of a fetish on display or something here, but there was like a very, it was a strange mom tone that came out of Jenny just now. We go to the break, and I said, oh, I'm going to do the Squires Electric spot. If you guys need to use the bathroom or, you know, just get water or anything, we've been, you know, a couple minutes. And Jenny just turned on that mom voice of the, she turned and go, do you need to use the bathroom?
Sorry, Rob.
Is that a voice that you just develop being a mom, or is it just like, do you have to practice it?
It goes along with that look.
Really?
You know, the look that, so like, just rips you in two that you get from your mom.
Is that a thing where it's like you just, nature just equips you with a handbook?
It just happens.
You wake up and you miraculously have that ability?
Yes, I think so.
Is it the other, here's the other skill that moms have. Teachers have this ability sometimes as well, where they can just sort of, they can stare, not necessarily at you, but at an indistinct point in the middle of the classroom between two aisles. Where the teachers just give you that look that's the temperature of liquid nitrogen that just, like, it just silences the entire classroom.
It's the, oh, I'm disappointed in you look.
Exactly. Do you also get, like, a mom phrase book that comes with sort of a, because I said so?
I don't know that I have that, because we're way too open with that
stuff. Do you ever, whenever parents are in the studio, I always have to sort of drill them with these questions because it's just things I don't know.
Oh, I love it.
Do you find yourself saying things that you once swore you would never say to your children?
Oh, my God. Like, my daughter asked me the other day, there was some commercial about somebody would crash their car into the garage because they had done drugs. And she was like, I would never do drugs. Mommy, have you ever done drugs? And it was like, No, never.
There is a teacher at school somewhere that is instructing her to interrogate you about that.
I was shocked.
So is the answer just like a brick wall of denial?
Oh, yeah. Well, for me.
Okay. Awesome. SquiresElectric.com helps to make this program possible. Contact them at 503-252-1609. That is 503-252-1609. You can go to SquiresElectric.com, which is their website. That is SquiresElectric.com. They've been here for going on 13 years. So whether it is installation, repair, upgrade, if you've got a business, if you've got a home, if you've got a business in your home, you are perhaps merging, you are consolidating, you are expanding, you are growing your business, you're moving into a new facility, you can have them come out and make sure that you're going to pass the inspection right. You're going to do it the first time, and you're going to save yourself money in the process. So contact them at 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. Proud sponsors of this, the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Well, they know that tomorrow won't be unlike today, yeah. nothing, a clothesline to let me take home. I show no emotion, you won't see me cry. What's the commotion if everyone dies? Can't sing my generation, 'cause Pete Townsend's body I. All of my young life, it's been a lie. And all around me, I smell something burning. It could be my brain on drugs. I look at the world and I don't see it turning. Just sits in this hole that's been dug.
News Network.
Well, that's well done.
I'm just warning you.
All right. Is this a, how do I put this? Is it more of a gurgling or more of a sloshing happening inside?
I'm really not sure. It's just,
is it more of a or kind of a?
There may be like a small alien about to burst out of my chest. I have no idea what
it is. A gnome of some kind is taking a residence in your stomach.
An ancient Indian shaman is growing in my skin.
No, that's okay.
Sounds like somebody needs a good leeching.
Yes.
Where's my blood bowl? This is that goddamn song with horse in the back of it again.
What is that?
Why do I own a thing that has a horse just whinnying? All right.
Why wouldn't you?
Hold on. I gotta make that go away. All right. Here we go. It's
disturbing.
Seriously,
it was
one of those days where it was a long night at Timberland Studio, apparently, and there was just nothing else to sample. They just run out of, we're out of James Brown records. Get me a horse. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. During the break, we had like 700 things come up. So we were talking about the Sleep Country Pajama Bowl and Jenny and Rob are here. And so we should mention, so give us the rundown of who all is on the team. Because it's you guys and Scott.
And Scott.
And it's the original team from 2 years ago. So I want to make sure that I've got the makeup of the team right.
Right,
so
and John. And Michael.
Okay, so there we go. So that is the version of the team that bowled a couple years ago.
Right. And last year we had Tom Sutton sat in for John.
For John.
And now we've got the original lineup.
Unlike the last 2 years, though, this is going to be in Beaverton. And so somebody said, I'm confused, is it in Beaverton or Vancouver? Mm-hmm. So it takes place at both locations. We, however, are going to be in Beaverton. This is this coming Sunday, March 13th at 11 a.m.
So we're in Beaverton.
We are.
Oh, okay.
No. We're going to the Muhammad is going to the mountain. That is, we're bringing the fight to them, as they say.
Okay.
So yeah. So Geek in the City, their team is bowling at Beaverton. So now we will take our action to Beaverton
as
well.
I didn't even know that was an option, but hey.
So that's closer to you, and I mean and plus you don't have to go to not that Vancouver isn't a fascinating place filled with interesting people because it's interesting in its own. In its own way.
I have to admit being dazzled by that damn bowling facility, though.
Oh, by Big Al's?
It's incredible, yeah.
Oh, it's awesome.
It's like its own convention center of bowling.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those places where you just see it and it's like you can get just the tiniest glimpse of what it might be like to go there if you were a kid. And it would just be the most glorious. I mean, it would just be a palace of delights and wonders, the likes of which you had never before experienced.
It's like if they have bowling alleys at Epcot.
Yeah.
This is what it would be. It's huge. It's just massively huge. And there's this massive bar and there's lights flashing.
Well, and arcades. And a sports bar on one side of it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's mammoth.
It is just expansive. I mean, it just goes off for just miles and miles, it seems like, in every direction, which is, you know, and let me just ask you this. Did you guys. I don't know, like Jenny, for example, if you ever took your daughter to Chuck E. Cheese, is that a thing that all parents a portal of hell through which all must pass? Or
we had, I think there was one of her little friends kind of had a party there one time, and we went, and she got up kind of in that little human habit trail that they have that runs all around the roof, and like you can kind of crawl up it, and it's little tubes
in which you can
stuff.
Be stuck.
Well, she got up there and then freaked out,
of course,
and so. You know, I don't know. I pawn a lot of the dirty jobs off on my husband, Adam, who is just the greatest guy ever. And so, like, she's up there. You can hear her crying. And I look at him. And I'm just like, well, are you going to go get her? And he's, you know, like a guy. I mean, I could probably fit up there easier than him. He was just like, ugh.
So
went up there and got her. But she was afraid of the mouse. She was crying.
Really, if you're afraid of the mouse, Chuck E. Cheese is the wrong place to.
It was just horrible.
I completely sympathize, though, because I was afraid of everything that was horrible and weird, and my mother shoved me at it when I was a kid. She's like, look, we're at Knott's Berry Farm, and here's a guy dressed like an Indian chief. Go let him touch you.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, you know, and I wouldn't go through the entrance to Adventureland at Disneyland that had the skulls and stuff. We had to go around the other way in the back entrance because I wouldn't go through the gate with the skulls, even though my parents kept explaining, it's the same place. No matter how you go in, I think those
are subtleties that are maybe not graspable by the child mind very easily.
And I was freaked out, and I'm still freaked out by guys in, you know, giant suits.
Well, because there's something not quite right about that.
Yeah.
The reason I ask is because there is a Chuck, and I don't mean that, it's like I'm picking on 82nd, you know, but there's a Chuck E. Cheese right up by 82nd.
I have a story about that one.
Okay, please. Well, you've been there.
And it's actually just the opposite of Jenny in the sense that my oldest was so comfortable when she was 3 years old in the human habit trail. Yes, that's what we call it, too. She disrobed.
Wow.
And is crawling around over our heads, and she's completely naked.
And did somebody finally go, Rob, is that your girl up there?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
She's all naked.
And every now and then, don't they have like little windows where you can kind of see in there?
You see
like your little butt go by.
Exactly.
Oh, God.
Yes.
just sort of butt prints left on the glass throughout.
It wasn't that she just came out naked. She was crawling around over our heads and like, well, there she goes. Yeah. Oh, there's the one without the clothes.
What was the... I mean, she was how old at the time?
About 3 or 4.
How old is she now?
13.
So you, right at the right age for embarrassment, I'm just saying.
I'll be playing this later.
You wheel the story out at, you know. But I mean, were you ever able to figure out what thought process?
It was hot.
I mean, I'm comfortable.
So God forbid she come in the studio.
Well, look, it's hot in here. I'm not waving my penis around. I mean, it's...
No, the thing, Rick, is that you don't know because you don't have kids. You can't really question too much of like why they do what they do. There really isn't an answer for most things. It just kind of is like, what was that? And they just, you just kind of got to go, wow, that's the freaky thing that they just did, you know?
So they just have a sort of like a weird non-linear kind of processing where you just jump from one thing to another.
Well, and you sit back and you're kind of amazed by it because like, how did you get from A to Z there? What was... Wow, that's cool. I never would have put those dots together.
The only reason I ask is because I grew up. There was a Chuck E. Cheese in Kennewick, which is one of the few things about Kennewick when I was growing up that was actually kind of great. And I was fortunate enough for about a year and a half. The kid who lived across the street from me, we had this house across the street where like nobody, we couldn't get anybody to stay there for some reason. And I like to think that it wasn't us, and it probably wasn't. But I know, but we just had like different people living across the street all the time. But there was like this 18-month window where the kid who lived across the street, his dad managed the Chuck E. Cheese. And so that was awesome. Because like, you know, like once a month, you know, a few times a year, at least we would get to go to the Chuck E. Cheese like with the kid. And his dad, who was the manager, who would just sort of like give you the run of the place, which was fantastic. And I don't think that this is a thing I'm just remembering. It's like when you go back to your grade school or whatever, and it's like the toilets are all small, and you're like, what the, you know. I don't think it's I'm just remembering the Chuck E. Cheese as being bigger than it was. I mean, obviously, it seemed larger than because I was a kid, but also it did seem like it was multiple rooms and it was sort of different. You know, there was a sort of dining room that was an adjunct off by itself, where there was like a weird sort of mechanical thing that would happen like nine times an hour or something. Mm-hmm. And then there was the room my dad sought refuge, which was just this tiny little alcove room with some large creepy animatronic animal that sang Elvis songs. And so he would just sort of sit there and drink like pitchers of Löwenbräu and ponder his many mistakes while the rest of us were off doing whatever. And so, but my wife had never been to a Chuck E. Cheese. And it was like we'd moved to Portland. She had just somehow, I don't think they had that in Utah. It was like an avenue of fun, like all the others that had been closed off to them like early on. And so she wasn't able to go. And I said, no, you got to go to Chuck E. Cheese. It's fantastic. It's awesome. And so then we saw one on 82nd. And it's like I should have known just by dint of the location that it was just going to be, you know, it was just going to be filled with sadness and pain and suffering and sweat and scabies. And it was just, we walked in. And first of all, the thing about that Chuck E. Cheese is it's just one big room. It's just one big room, and it's just one big square room made of concrete and glass, which means it's one big, bright, loud room, an incredibly noisy room filled with grubby-faced young people running here and there, and then the occasional child disrobing, apparently. And it was just – it was bizarre. It was almost like it wasn't a Chuck E. Cheese at all. And I wondered if that was happening across the board, if I somehow got lucky and had an aberrant Chuck E. Cheese growing up, or if they had over time – if revenues had decreased and they were just shrinking it down out of necessity.
Well, I've been to ones in Beaverton and actually in the Couve, and they seemed to be a little bit nicer than the one on 82nd.
Okay, so this really is just a Southeast Portland thing.
I had a birthday party at Bullwinkle's once.
Now, is that that's the place out by, on the way to Fry's?
Yeah, the one right. I was at was one in Southern California, but yeah, it's the same thing. It's basically Chuck E. Cheese, except they licensed the J. Ward characters. And so there's like Bullwinkle pizza.
Oh, as in Bullwinkle Rocky,
yeah,
and
Bullwinkle
Boris
Rocky,
and Natasha.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
I never put that together that was the – because mm-hmm. I've never been to the one here. So I had no idea that it was actually the Bullwinkle.
And yeah, and if you're the birthday kid, they put your name in there. They're like, happy birthday, happy birthday. Dawn. Happy birthday. You know? Which, you know, I was like 26 at the time, that was pretty awesome.
Did they say it like – did it sing it like in the creepy, weird, like automated, you know, sort of would insert it?
I think it's just some poor schlep in the back who has to do it.
On the mic.
Who just like has – that's their turn to sit there and then just wait for the right moment and say, Shirley. You know, and you know.
It was like those. Did your grandmother ever do this, or like somebody in your family? There was that that jazz when you were a kid, where you could, you would get a children's book into which your name had been clumsily and ham-handedly inserted. So one day, Rick went, you know, on an adventure to the zoo, and it was like the type was all like off-center and like, you know, and like upside down every now and again. It was like even as a child, you can sort of see through to the innate like cheesiness and horror of that gift. I do have to say, I would be remiss if I did not know that during the break here. So it was my birthday. Yesterday and again, happy birthday to
thank you,
Jenny.
Very much.
Do you have big plans for your evening?
No, we went out last night to Gustav's for dinner.
All right, so you're
for fondant.
It's not a
and then, tonight. I'm cooking actually for my own birthday.
Happy birthday and celebrating International Woman's Day.
I know.
As well, so.
Maybe I'll use a flirty apron or something, right?
maybe yours is a Mormon household.
I know, maybe.
So I'd say that during the break, Rob had brought in these two presents that I opened them. And first of all, this package right here is just a package of bungee cords. And this is a not too subtle reminder that I still have some of your bungee cords from when we went to Christmas Mountain Trees. And I then realized that I had nothing with which to tether. I think I just had nothing with – like I had the like little twine or whatever that they had just
– well, they gave you the twine.
Yeah.
It's just you had a tree for the studio and one for home.
That's right. And so we had the two.
And once you untethered it,
That's right.
Once here at the studio, you didn't know how you were going to tie it down.
So that's really – I didn't – because you never think these things all the way through to the end if you're me. And so it's – yeah, I was thinking, well, if we drop this, you know, the tree off of the studio, then I was basically going to be clinging to the top of the car like Hooper as it goes down the street to Southeast Portland. And so you were next to us at the – what was the name of the
– Skyline Drive-In.
Skyline Drive-In, which had a fantastic hamburger, by the way. I'm telling you right now. That was some fine eating is what that was. And so he's sitting there, and I'm just saying, so anyway, in a voice that I swear to God was not really designed to get your attention for this purpose, but so I have no idea how we're going to get that other tree back to the house. If only we had some bungee cords. And then it's like you just appeared like Moses, like out of the void, out of the darkness, and just saying, you know, here you go. And you
have SUV. Must have bungee.
And I want to say, in my own defense, the bungee cords that you let me in now 3 months ago are, in fact, I did set them out at my house on the sort of counter in the kitchen, intending to bring them with me today.
Really?
I just didn't. God is my witness. I did, in fact, set them out. I just completely failed to bring them.
Well, we had talked about meeting up at Lisa and Brian Wood's anniversary party, and I didn't end up going to that, and I'm not sure if you ended up doing it, but no, I have not been sitting here fretting over bungee cords for 2.5 months.
If you actually just give him back those bungee cords,
then it'll be a wash.
Then you're even.
And let's pretend, by the way, that I went to Lisa and Brian's and I was holding the bungee cords, walking around all night with tears in my face, looking for you so I could return them, because I don't want to be that guy.
Maybe you can have them draped around your neck, kind of sad.
Exactly. the other item that I received was this, and this is just like a conglomeration of all things good and righteous about this country. This is a packet of 10 individually wrapped slices of Borden Applewood bacon cheddar cheese. And Don, what was your question about this?
If it was actual cheese or if it was cheese food product.
Now, before I give you the answer, let me ask you this. What is, and I know this sounds dumb, but I don't know, because you see this a lot where it'll say, like, you know, chocolate type substance, or, you know, gum-esque material. What is cheese food as compared to cheese? I know you're going to say that one has cheese in it, one doesn't.
No, I'm going to say that cheese is a very specific, it's a cultured milk product. Cheese food is something that is made from cheese. It has cheese in it to some degree, but it also has milk solids and water and stabilizers and all kinds of other
things
in it.
So it's better than cheese because it's got cheese and other things in it.
Exactly.
Anybody can have just cheese.
That's why we call it American cheese, because it's better than cheese.
Yes.
It's an augmented cheese.
Right.
This is, in fact, a flavored, pasteurized, prepared cheese product.
Yes. So if you look at the back, it'll have ingredients, you know.
Milk. These are all things I recognize. Milk, whey, and I don't really even know what whey is. Whey is like frankincense. It's one of those things you just hear reference, but it's like I don't really know if I...
Isn't whey the watery part?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Skim milk, milk protein concentrate, cream, calcium phosphate, and then a whole lot of things that...
Does it say bacon on there anywhere?
No, of course not. It does... Oh, by the way, the very last ingredient... cheese. So awesome. This thing, I would have a slice right now, but it would make me look like a glutton. So I'll be having a slice as soon as today's
program. But it's
program
your birthday cheese. You can eat your birthday cheese.
Excellent. Thank you, Don. I appreciate you giving me... So thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Really, you do always know just what to get. Where is it you said you bought this?
Grocery Outlet.
And so now you said Grocery Outlet, and then everybody in the room did, except for me, did sort of a like a nod of the head and sort of a knowing kind of a... please to explain Grocery Outlet.
Grocery Outlet is kind of like, it's like a Big Lots of food.
Really?
Yes. It's all weird. It's all off brands and overstocks and things that are like just wrong. And they're sold super, super cheap.
Now, see, but that doesn't sound like... but none of that sounds like it equals wrong. All of that sounds like it equals fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Like it equals a place that I really...
All of it sounds like it equals diarrhea, if you ask me.
There are like strange off-brand cans of vegetables that you've never heard of that brand before. You know, Shasta soda in flavors you never even imagined. You're like... Mango tiki lime, what the hell is this? Yeah, it's a magical place.
Is this one of those places we've talked about occasionally where they will dump like sort of strange versions or variants of things that don't quite strike a chord with the American public the way that they thought they might?
Yeah, I
think so.
So like the pina colada Pop Tart or something, and they just sort of dump it all into that place for a dollar a ton.
Yeah, they'll buy like, you know, huge lots of things that just didn't sell elsewhere or something. So you will get weird canned goods, lots of the word canned goods, things like that. But things like I remember once I bought this huge bag. I think it was like 3 or 4 pounds of, they called them belly flops. And they are the mistake jelly bellies. And they sell them in like 3 or 4 pound mixed bags. And they're all the Jelly Belly jelly beans that came out like just shaped wrong.
All mutated.
Yeah. And it just said belly flops on it. And it was just a clear cellophane bag and it said belly flops on it in plain black, you know, thing. And it was like 3 pounds, you know, $2.50 or something. And, you know.
Imagine just what a sad childhood. Just being at home, just eating a bag of mistake candy.
Yeah.
I mean, really, there's just, that is as low as it can possibly get if you're a kid. There's just no, by the way, this cheese, I'm sorry, this cheese product is fantastic.
Excellent.
This really is wonderful.
Well done, Bob.
I'm not a snob in that I require my cheese to actually have like real cheese in it or anything. That's for better minds and
fancy people.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's
for above themselves.
That's for big city folk.
I was there looking for goat cheese, something foo foo fancy, and I saw that and I thought of you instantly.
Here's the place. Like there's speaking again of 82nd, which is the home of all wonderful things. 82nd, you know, of course, is just this. It is like this magical zenith. It's this nexus of culinary plenty in like in the most horrible ways. But there's also there's the Gen X clothing store, I believe, is there, which is where I would imagine a plurality of Sarah's clothing comes from that place. And then there's is it a Food for Less or is it a Winco? I believe it's a Food for Less. It might be right there. And the thing about the Food for Less is they've got the most magical aisle there where I cannot read a single word of description on any of the. And the other thing is, it's not like that. It's not like some of the aisles of the store where they will, in fact, tell you, like, why you can't read anything. Like, you'll go to the Safeway on 39th. It's not like I really care, but you figure they wouldn't do this anymore. There's just a huge sign that just says Oriental above one of the aisles. And you just kind of go, okay, I guess, you know. It's just like that, or, you know, it's like there's the alleged Hispanic section, which is really just like, it's where they just put, like, taco shells. So they put taco shells and like some Lowry's like taco powder, and then like a thing of jalapenos in a can, and like that's it. And occasionally you'll see someone who is obviously of Mexican derivation, sort of pushing the cart through, and they stop and they look, and then they just do. It's like, and then they become some sort of Mexican ironized Cody, just like a single tear, you know, pushing their cart on down. But there's this aisle here where it's not like it's not Asian, it's not Russian, it's not Spanish. I can't tell what it is, but it's just jars and jars and jars and jars of what looks like tentacles, with a beak inside at some point, and I have no idea what it is. It may not be a beak, but it's very beak-like. Also at the same store, they sell just this little tin can, and I swear to God, in the front it just says meat. And that's all. There's no further description given. I mean, I guess I could look at the ingredients, but that would almost ruin the magic of it.
Don't do that.
No. Dawn, what might be in a can that's just labeled meat?
I'm thinking probably your Spam kind of thing.
Not like so it's not like an odds and ends, sort of a leftover.
I remember back when Ralph's grocery store in Los Angeles started the whole generic food thing with the blue stripe across, which is all the stuff they used in Repo Man. And that was the Ralph's generic product. And you could get beer. And it just said beer and a thing. And they had Spam, and it was a white can with a blue stripe, and it just said on it, food product. And we used to have several cans of that lined up in the kitchen just because it was so funny.
Food product is interesting.
It said food product.
I mean, that really is like the very definition of subsistence, you know, purchasing, right? Like when it's like all you really need is just like – that is a post-apocalyptic sort of food decision right there, when you really just need something that contains calories in some way, shape, or form.
Well, and can you get any more vague?
No. I mean, that's the other thing. It's like what – I mean
– food or not food?
And it's like – and you wonder, like, what kind of inspection process does that, like, go through? And is there some poor soul that has to taste that at the factory every now and again to make sure that it's, like, up to their food product standards?
And it didn't specify human food product either.
Yeah. No, and the – by the way, our good friend John weighs in and says two things, sort of the double-pronged comment. One says – some stuff that is just wrong, and you got it for a birthday present. Hooray for you. Secretary says, remember, I got to tell you, there's a real odd aftertaste that comes with this cheese product of yours, though.
That's the taste of future cancer.
Yeah, thanks, Jenny. I appreciate that.
That's probably that artificial bacon flavoring.
I wonder if this is what it I wonder if this is like the last thing you taste at Guantanamo before you wake up in a chair and there's a guy tasing your junk. And then he says, please to remember Safeway's – I forgot all about this. Safeway's Scotch Buy food.
Yeah. Mm.
He said cheap food and insulting to a whole nation all in one purchase. I forgot all about that. And there was a guy like in this sort of like the bad – like the tartan golf hat or something.
Oh, it was what's his name who was the Scarecrow in The Wizard of Oz.
Ray Bolger?
Ray Bolger. And Ray Bolger was the Scotsman in the Scotch Buy ads, and he would do a little dance and sing a little song. Oh, yeah, it was Ray Bolger.
And he'd say, like, crikey, or whatever Scotch people say.
Right. Except not crikey.
Or what is it?
Faith and Begora.
Yeah. Is that what they...
We've just about offended everybody.
The thing is, I remember seeing this as a kid and having no idea, like just thinking it was just some guy, like thinking he was sort of like the Jolly Green Giant. Like I had no idea that there was... I don't think I put Scotch and Scotland together because they're two different words. You're very young, and I don't think you make that connection. And also, I had no idea that there was some sort of a stereotype, which may or may not bear any relation to reality about the Scotch being a thrifty people. And so I just remember thinking it was just a guy who would like who just seemed really happy about everything. Like he just seemed sort of jocund about his life in general because
he was a thrifty Scotsman who was happy that you were saving money on your dog food and your dishwashing soap.
Okay then, so they must have gotten rid of that about the same time that they got rid of like the Cragmont and the whatever. Like just in one fell swoop, a guy must have just gone through.
Yeah, but they always come back and they still have those things though.
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's Lucerne, right?
Yeah, Lucerne. You go to Fred Meyer. They got Big K. They got Safeway. Still have what is it? President's Select or something? It's supposed to make it look fancy, but you know it's still a generic product.
Well, that's the thing. And you know who's the most sensitive? There's the most sensitive people to generic, but it really is nature's way of distributing favors unevenly, because the people who are most finely attuned to and can spot the difference between name brand and generic brand are kids.
Yeah.
And kids, man, it's like when your dad brings that like big ass bag of cereal like in a dog food thing from like the bottom shelf, and it's just this weird sort of opaque cellophane bag, and it's one of these they're fun whirls, you know, and it's like there's nothing fun about fun whirls. Anything that is made to approximate a better, more expensive product, or at least better from your childlike perspective, it's like you'd rather just have nothing. You'd rather have a bowl of sand than to have him serve you, you know, just have a stick of wax as opposed to fruit whirls.
And it's humiliating when you have to go into the cabinet and pull out the pillow-sized bag of, like, Fruity O's and, like, try and pour yourself, like, one bowl out of it.
Or as a kid, if you had to share that. Like, I remember being in Little League and having to bring the pop. You know, each kid had to bring the pop one week and having to bring a certain brand if it wasn't Coke or Pepsi.
Oh, God. And then there was that weird period in the late 80s where it's like everybody was going back to whatever ghetto supermarket they went to and like refilling it themselves for 15 cents. Where it's like I don't know if this was a thing that spread elsewhere, but it's like you would have like reusable 2-liter bottles and you would actually go back to the store and they would refill your 2-liter bottle of soda for you.
I don't remember that.
That was a thing. See, maybe that was a thing. Maybe they test marketed that in because Washington State gets Washington State is a test market for many, many things, as I found out when I was growing up. And you would literally like you would buy. It was I don't want to say it was a scam. I mean, it kind of was because they would sell you a 2-liter bottle that was the same size and shape as the regular 2-liter bottles, slightly thicker, but not so much that it's going to make it like healthy. I mean, plastic is still plastic, and so it's still going to hold. You know, think it's still going to give you cancer eventually. But you would get your terrible like off-brand soda. You'd go home, you'd drink it, and then you would go back to the store. They would like stick the thing to it, like take it from you. You would hand it over to the guy at the counter. He would hook it to like a power washing spigot. It would go, and it would clean it out. He would shake it loose, and then they would just stick it under a spigot, another, and they would fill it again with soda, and they would charge you like, you know, 38 cents or something for it, which is still like a 300% markup probably. And yet you were sort of – so it was like the worst of all possible worlds because you were still paying too much for something that was going to give you cancer and cavities. And then also, hey, it marked you as a poor person. You might as well be walking out in a barrel with suspenders, you know, holding it up around you. Ridiculous.
You're coming away with some like soda pop or something I still don't understand today when I walk into my own Fred Meyer and in the entryway there is a water dispenser that you bring your 5-gallon jug. And people fill it up, and I'm like, you're coming in here to grab Fred Meyer's tap water to take it home instead of using your own tap water?
That's interesting.
It's not like a 500-gallon jug on the top of the building that's got purified water up there.
I never really thought about
probably
that.
Probably have a, you know, a Brita filter hooked up to that machine. And
it's probably a hose from out in the garden center. Yeah, exactly. Drug around the back.
I guess that I've never really – I guess I've seen those things my whole life, but I've never really thought about them because I've never seen one or noticed someone using it.
Oh, yeah.
That's strange.
Yeah, I don't understand. Why would you travel all that way with a jug instead of just turning on your own tap? How bad is your house?
That doesn't make any sense at all.
That probably would have gone over actually in Kennewick if you think about it.
Yeah, well, you know.
Well, I used to use one of those briefly when I lived in Southern California, when I lived in the Hollywood area. And between our really old house and just California water, the water tasted horrible. And we had been getting like sparklets for a while, and it was just too expensive. And so for a while, we were refilling the bottles at that thing. But then I moved to Oregon. It's like, water here tastes good.
Yeah,
people have nothing to complain about with the tap water here.
Let's see. So I don't know if this is true or not. So there's a little bit of and I checked because there's no actual news source on this yet. This is just apparently the thing the Twitterverse is saying. And this is not Sheen related, by the way. I'll just do a little. So this is from our friend Aaron in the OC. Let's see. Hold on a second. Aaron, I'm sorry. I'm smiling at something else. I'm really not smiling at this. Aaron of the OC says, Twitter is reporting that Mike Starr, who is the former bassist for Alice in Chains, has died. I don't know if that is true or not, so we are not saying that is true, but apparently that is the thing that people saying on saying on Twitter. So I sort of assumed everybody in that band was dead or dying anyway. I just, you know, they don't seem like a long-living people in Alice in Chains. I mean, you know, that just... That was one of those things, like, I
think breaking news is someone in Alice in Chains was still alive.
Really? I mean, I feel like such a jerk saying this, but it's like when Layne Staley died, I swear to God, I thought he had been dead for years. I thought it's like, he's sort of like Ruth Buzzy in that regard. Was it you that told me the other day that Ruth Buzzy is still alive?
I believe so, yes.
I don't even know how that's possible. I mean, I guess it is, but I mean, you know.
She lived with Joanne Worley?
It's just one of those it's just one of those things where I guess she's just, you know, she's in some she's somewhere, you know, out of the public view, her and Joyce DeWitt. Yeah, they're all like sharing an apartment somewhere. Anyway, so Twitter is reporting
TMZ is carrying it. So
really?
Yeah.
All right. Now I'm immediately smacked around by somebody who says, "Be nice, the new Alice in Chains record is really good." So well, okay.
He put his all into it.
I guess listen to it slowly, friend. So there you go. So that's Mike Starr, former bassist for Alice in Chains, has died at the end of a long life and from natural causes.
Well, it's 44.
I'm sure.
It's not an incredibly long life.
I'm trying to remember if I've interviewed that guy. I think I might have. I think Mike Starr is the guy. I interviewed one of the – it was when they put out that – what is that – that what was that song they put out when I was at KUFO? Is it Check My Brain or Check My Head or something or other? It was the song about being in California. It was actually not a bad song. But I
think it was the Check My...
Everything like from the KUFO era has this sort of like... It's like putting something in the fridge when the milk has gone bad and like everything smells like bad milk. Like all the records that came out at that point, even the ones that I would presumably like, sort of have that KUFO taint on them. All I remember it was that record that sounded like a lawnmower going over wet grass at the beginning, sort of a thing over and over. It was like slowing up and speeding down for like 4 minutes and it made your brain feel like it was melting. So I think
that
I interviewed...
That sounds fun.
I think it was just a strange record, but it was actually really good. And I think I interviewed this guy when they were coming to town. If so, I certainly won't be digging out that interview and flogging his corpse for extra listeners as the week unfolds. Also, Charlie Sheen has set what he is ominously referring to as, quote, my final broadcast. So there's, you know, so there's that as well.
Well,
glory days of Sheen are coming to an end, are they?
Well, hey, Rick, I have something to tell you. I mentioned it maybe earlier. You know, Rob brought you these presents, and this weekend we were driving up to Seattle to see some friends. Oh, and I saw the Goo Goo Dolls, which is a whole different story.
When? Which is just recently?
Yeah, on Saturday.
Did he? Did Resnick still have those huge, gigantic teeth? Like they got like
yeah,
those Basil Wolverton teeth?
But I got to tell you, he was messed up, like drunk messed up. And I've seen him, like, I think this is like my eighth time, and this was the one where I have seen him in like the worst condition ever of like a cliche of a washed up rock star.
So this was, this the actual Goo Goo Dolls, or was it like the Goo Goo Dolls is Johnny Resnick?
No, it's them, like Robbie and the whole band and everything. But anyway, we're driving up to Seattle, and I made this joke that it was your birthday on Monday, which is not a joke, but I said, oh, maybe I should buy Rick a present. My daughter said, why don't you buy him some truck nuts?
I don't know where they.
And was that a
what little kid?
Was that a thing
pregnant?
That she was under the? Was she laboring under the illusion that my life was incomplete,
no
save for the? You know,
it was just really random.
That was what was standing between me and eternal happiness.
I think so. Truck nuts.
You know,
you mean like the nuts that go on the
these pseudo testicles that one like hangs from the back. Of
the thing.
Well, yeah. It's consistent with the penis watch theme.
I guess. Have you thought
that's
about?
That's probably what she's thinking.
I don't mean this the way it sounds.
It's all right.
Is it possible that your daughter just has some penis fixation?
I know she might.
Or a fixation on that general area?
I think she knows it's kind of, you know,
do you, I mean,
kind of risky, you know, to talk about.
Here's the thing. And I'm just saying this in the abstract. Please forgive me. Have I even met your daughter? And I apologize for not remembering
it
that.
It was a long time ago.
I don't know if
ago.
I have or not.
It was a really, really long time ago.
So I'm just saying this in the abstract. But that's sort of a... That's going to have a sort of bell curve kind of effect, depending on what age she is, if she just sort of has a predilection for just bringing up penises in conversation a lot. I would say the kind of results that that's going to lead to is that depending on what stage of life she's in, I just don't know that that's always going to – that might be a thing you're going to hear about, as you said, from school or perhaps the police at some point. So,
police.
You know,
perhaps.
I'm just saying. So just, you know, just be keeping an
perhaps.
Eye out.
So you don't want truck nuts then.
Well, apparently – Rob's daughter can't keep her clothes on. So there's this whole
we're models
thing going
of perfect
on.
Parents.
I'm saying if you got the truck nuts handy, Rick Emerson would certainly take them. I'll put them next to my variety of peeing Calvins.
Yeah.
So do these things look like – I've heard tell of
you've
these.
You've seen them. Like, you know what they look like. I mean,
like giant
you know
gonads
what,
hanging off the back of a truck.
Yeah. You know what they
it's
look
disturbing.
Like, Don. I mean,
maybe I've just purposely just kind of ignored that.
I don't know that they're in your neck of the woods a lot. I don't know that they'd be allowed like in your neighborhood. I think that there's
looking,
a –
I'm looking these up now.
I think that anyone driving to where you live, you know, with those would just be stopped.
And
I mean,
thing is, I think the last time we saw them was like last summer in Montana.
Yeah.
And somehow it stuck with hers, and she was trying to put the truck nuts with you.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, it's like there's a direct proportion there. Like the greater number of unfinished roads near your home, the higher the likelihood that yeah, they're just huge balls.
That's
really
horrifying.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
Why would someone think that is okay?
I know.
And they're expensive.
Yeah.
Like if they were a bargain, that'd be something different.
But I mean, people are paying like $30-$40 for these.
You should get a huge pair of fallopian tubes and just hang them off the back of your car.
Or I boobs. Will. Just ovaries, you know, or something.
Truck boobs. Oh, by the way, and speaking of boobs, and I know that that's not like a rare occurrence or something on this show. I don't know if I actually have. I'm going to see if I actually have this. If I have this this message,
can I share this briefly though? When I looked up, what I come up with is hanging truck balls by Bull's Balls trademark, the original truck ball company. Bull's Balls, the originator of truck balls, first and second generations. Buyers be aware. You may see imitations, however, you won't find any equal to our second-generation truck balls.
Okay. Is there a thriving market in knockoff pseudo testicles for the back of one's vehicle?
No,
but they probably hang.
Parenthetically, it does say includes hanging chain and brass lock.
Awesome.
Oh yeah, because they come with a lock. Because otherwise, someone might steal your truck balls.
Yes.
Dear Lord.
Castrate your truck.
The thing is, you just hope though. The only saving grace there would be if the guy who invented. By the way, we've kept you guys here for like 9 hours. Do you have someplace to be, or just like
I'm cooking my own damn birthday dinner? So really.
Okay. Well, I was just because otherwise I feel bad about this. And also, Dawn apparently said like moments away from hurling like at every.
Actually, that seems to have passed.
Oh really?
At the moment, I'm feeling much much better.
I should say this, we'll move off for the truck balls thing just to get to the back to boobs. I meant to mention this on the – I think it was on Monday, and then I just sort of forgot about it. But the discussion of truck nuts and boobs now just sort of brought it back. And thankfully, Skype does this great thing of saving messages that are sent to you up to like the week. So do you remember last week – I guess it would have been Friday or something – there was our listener Walter, who listens to us in the Netherlands, in Rotterdam. He had sent me a message because I guess I'd stayed logged on or something, and I'd gone to bed, but I'd left the Skype thing saying like I hadn't said it's like away or invisible or asleep or whatever. And so he'd sent me a message that said like, hey, it's 3:30 in the morning your time. Like, what are you still doing up or whatever? And you know, on Skype, it's not unlike on the on Xbox or Instant Messenger or something. It's like a little avatar, like a little picture you can put to sort of represent you. And I thought that it was just a giant boob. I guess. you could say, well, why would a guy have a giant, boob as his avatar? But I mean, really, I mean, if you think about some of the things, if you think about some of the things that this audience chooses to do, really, why not? I mean, it's not like it's so much stranger than anything else. So I got this message from Walter when he logged back in. He said, hey, Rick, listening to the podcast, I thought your comment on my avatar was great. It's not actually a boob. It is a picture of a golem that my wife and I took when visiting the Jewish quarter in Prague. So there you go. So the next time that you are seeing a golem or clay beast in the Jewish quarter in Prague or, wherever.
How do you mistake a golem for a boob?
I don't know. And then he followed it up the next day with another message that says in all caps, it is a golem, not a boob. Hmm. So just, in case you're having difficulty telling those two things apart and you come up with some sort of mnemonic device that's going to make it easier, you just clue me in on that so I don't make that mistake again. Look, in my own defense, it was really small. I mean, it's like the size of a stamp. I mean, it's how – and I've never really seen a golem up close. It's not a thing that you're it's not a thing you can just go do. So.
And some of them do tend to be rather nipply.
That's right, Don. Thank you. Before we do our house recap and then bring a curtain down on this whole thing, we should do this. It's okay. It's not like it's going to be a long recap because really what is there to say other than with every passing week I draw closer and closer to never watching that show again. I will say that it is time for clue number two for this week's EH Vending Name That Snack contest. Brought to you by EH Vending. You can find out more about it by going to ehvending.com. That is ehvending.com. Once again, that is ehvending.com is where you can find out more about it. And if you want to call them, you can do it as well. You can call them in Vancouver by calling 360-816-1853. That is 360-816-1853. Or you can call. It is 503-897-8204. 503-897-8204. And that is Josh and James. Josh, the owner, and James, sales manager. They are longtime listeners of the Rick Emerson Radio program. They've been listening for going on 13 years now. So if you have a vending provider who's coming to your office, he's not getting the job done, or he's charging too much, or you feel like you ought to be able to strike yourself a better deal, or maybe you're starting a business from scratch, or maybe you just don't like to stand and you want something within arm's reach that'll just sort of dispense fat and sugars at your command, you can have that brought to you. And really, honestly, this is America. I mean, look, I'm not within like 50 miles of a farm and I have, or of a cow in any way, and I have bacon, cheddar, cheese that I think will last forever. I mean, it doesn't, let me just say at no point here, there's nowhere on this does it say refrigerate.
But it has been.
I mean, but I think that's just optional is the sort of great thing about it. I mean, I think this is cheese that will just last like forever. I mean, it is effectively survival cheese.
I'll let
you
try that.
The apocalypse is coming.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, there's really just, there's not even any need to, I can just leave this here on the counter just instead of I'm feeling peckish at some point, I can just break into it. So really, it is a great country in which anything you desire can be brought within. Not even within your home. I mean, just within waggling distance of your little stumpy T-Rex arms. So you contact EH Vending by going to ehvending.com or calling 503-897-8204 or 360-816-1853. Everything from soda and snack machines, or pop, as they say in some places, all the way up to coffee service and to glass front refrigeration units. So you can call them at 360-816-1853. Clue number two. And again, if you are the first person to correctly identify this week's snack via snack@rickemerson.com, once Friday comes and we have given you the final clue, then you will win a large bag of consumable delights from EH Vending. This week's snack clue number two is Morris. That is the clue. Morris. M-O-R-R-I-S. Morris. That is the clue for this week's Name That Snack contest.
Don, do you know what when they do this, do you even know what they are?
No, I've decided I'd rather not know.
Now it's like a missile code.
Yeah.
We can't tell her. We just have to let it be a secret.
Yeah.
Before we do anything else, we'll just talk a little bit about house from last night, then we'll wrap it up and we'll all go our separate ways and live a life of religious fulfillment. Don, your thoughts on last night's episode of House, season 3, episode 15, yeah. Whose name I forget.
So Cuddy got a mass on her kidney. And she freaked out, and the house freaked out. And they had dreams, and we got to see their dreams. And on the one hand, one of these was kind of good. The I I kind of liked the dance sequence one.
The sort of cabaret thing they were doing at the end or whatever?
Yeah, only because I'm a big fan of the show So You Think You Can Dance. And the choreographer, Mia Michaels, did that number.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And she's one of my favorite choreographers on that show. Even though they made her a judge last season, and now that she's a judge, you discover that she's like a huge pretentious load, and you want to punch her in the head all the time. But she's still an amazing choreographer, and that number was awesome. On the other hand, though, this particular episode seemed a lot smarter and had more meat to it than some of the other episodes that we've had this season. There's still this tendency that the show has to think that it's really smart and not trust us to be smart too. And in which, for example, there's one of the dreams that I guess Cuddy was having in which she and Enhouse are the characters in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Right. And she has this thing where she notices that he has had candy in each of her dreams. And that, of course, represents to her that he is a child and won't grow up. So, of course, what she has to do is say that out loud in her dream so we get it.
Right.
Says, wait, she says, you've had candy in each of my dreams. That must be because I think you're a child and you won't grow up. And I just want to just kick the show right in the crotch. Every single time they do something
that is like a sort of an awkward expository thing or talking down to the audience. There's that, and then there's these like continuity errors that there's this moment where they show Cuddy because I guess they were doing this intentionally, where she is she's sleeping, they've given her Ambien, she's taking Ambien, and they show the bottle, and I swear to God, the bottle says, I forget exactly what the name of the clinical name for Ambien is. But the bottle identifies the tablets as being 200 milligrams in size. And look, I'm no chemist or nothing, but it seems to me you're not taking a whole lot. And I think it says, like, take four a day or something. You're not taking 200 milligram Ambiens, much less four times a day. So that's the sort of thing that I notice and then will take me out of the show for a little while. Here's another thing that I'll notice, and this isn't isolated to last night. This is sort of this is a symptom of something that we have noticed time and time again on House. When Taub is talking to the kid's parents, the kid who's making the pipe bombs and throwing them away, and he says at one point to the parents, because the kid is he's a sort of Eric Harris Columbine type, and he's got all these videos that they find at the house of him making pipe bombs and then blowing them up while like talking about the students he's going to off. And Taub says to the parents, "We found a bunch of videos of your kid blowing up pipe bombs," and at no point did the parents go like, "How?" Or, like, where? Where did you see those? Or
in our house? Why were you in our house?
Why? You know, because, of course, that would require him to say, like, well, I was breaking in. And then they'd say, what? And then it would just, like, unspool the entire thing, like a bad piece of alpaca. So there was no, like, explanation given because there was no questions asked about it. So that was odd.
I also think that it's probably a good thing that Cuddy and House, if they do actually break up, because for a while there, I was thinking, besides the fact they still have no chemistry, but I've reached a point where instead of thinking that, you know, why would she be with him? Because, you know, he's crazy.
Right.
Now I just every week feel like, why would he be with her? How many times can you have the person you are with look you in the eye and say, you know, the reason that you don't own any furniture or want to go on any trips or do anything with me is because you can't commit or grow up.
Right.
I mean, if somebody said that to you, like, at least once a week, you'd be gone. I mean, how many times can the person you love say that to you before you say, you know what, honey, I'm breaking up with you?
And the other thing about this is that, like,
telling me I can't grow up and I can't commit.
It might be a false standard, too, but the thing about House is that, I mean, as much as, like, I find the House-Wilson relationship sort of irritating sometimes because it's overly precious. Because House is, you know, House is so much the alpha, it's such a caricature of, like, an alpha-beta relationship where it's like, you know, where Wilson is basically that, you know, you're always right, Spike, you're the man, Spike, let's go, Spike. You know, he really is just a nebbish around House altogether. But the one thing you say about Wilson is that Wilson is a true friend, that he is not a fair-weather friend. House is relapsed. You know, House, of course, is an addict, and he's relapsed. And Wilson didn't scream, didn't lecture, didn't yell, just, handled it the way, I mean, regardless of what anybody watching the show or anybody in the real world thinks about addicts or how you should treat them, Wilson reacts the way that his character would and the way that a doctor probably would, which is not to judge or to berate or to scream, but just to say, it happens, we'll get past it, you know, it's not the end of the world, but, you know, we'll work on it and make sure it doesn't happen again. Whereas, like, Cuddy, who is presumably in love with House, it just has like zero tolerance for it. And every time House just slips up at all, like in the tiniest way, like Cuddy's just done with him. I mean, she's the most fair with. And even last night when he finally does the thing that she secretly thinks he won't do, which is to finally show up. And, he's late, but he breaks through this sort of, you know, resistance to seeing her in the hospital. And he makes what is for him a huge step forward by the end of the episode. But then also, you know, she discovers that he took a Vicodin, and that's it. That's where she's just like cutting. She's just cutting the cord, even though she knew all of this about him when she started dating him and has known it for 10 years.
I will say this, though, and they didn't address this at all. And I'm not sure if, because the show doesn't trust us to be smart enough to glean things. So I'm thinking it might be just an error. Like you said, they have these glaring continuity errors. She figures out that he took Vicodin because the sister says, "Oh, I got to take your sleeping pills and put them away so your super itsy bitsy small child doesn't get her hands on them," because she sees pills and she calls them candy.
Right.
And she realizes, aha, House has been taking pills around my child and saying they're candy, and that's why she says that. So then she goes to see House and says, "You took Vicodin," and he goes, "Well, yes, just the one time." And I'm thinking, well, just the one time isn't enough for your kid to start calling pills candy.
And also, just the one time, could that... well, here's another thing. I mean, is this going to be one of those things where it's just the one time that he's referring to is the time before that Wilson helped him get back on the wagon or something? In other words, is it going to turn out that it's a zany miscommunication and he didn't take the Vicodin last night?
I think he admitted to showing up stoned to the hospital. He seemed to pretty much admit to that.
And then at the end, he took like a couple more or whatever. But that does seem like a behavior in your child that wouldn't just pop into existence after...
I think what it is the writers have figured out that this whole season has been a mistake, and that having him sober and in a relationship with Cuddy has made the show just boring and dumb. And so now they're having the breakup and putting him back on the pills again.
Is it? Here's the thing that I don't really know, because I don't know a lot about how television operates. You know, despite my vast experience in the role as newscaster, do they write the entire season and then shoot the entire season, or are they? In other words, are they still writing episode like 17 when episode 1 actually airs?
Yes.
I'm not just talking about like wrapping the season. Like, do they, when they start airing a season, have they not even finished writing the rest of it?
No, they haven't. And that's for money. I just read Sarah Silverman's book about her show, and one of the fights that she had with Comedy Central about her show is that she likes to get together with her writers, write all the episodes of the show, and have all the scripts nailed down before they start shooting. And the thing is, it's a lot more expensive that way, because you have to pay people for the writing process and then for the shooting process.
Right.
If you've got the writers on staff while you're filming, then that like condenses the time that you're in production and really saves a huge amount of money. So they actually, you know, you've probably got maybe two scripts actually done when you start shooting. And then the rest of the season is being written as they go along. So you're actually maybe have one written, one or two scripts out before you shoot.
I guess that would make sense then, because they must have realized, you know, it's like turning a barge, you know, when they realize they need to make a change and it doesn't show up again for like, it, you know, the change doesn't appear in your television like 3 months later or something, where they saw the first few episodes and they just said, oh, God, this is like we made a huge mistake. We need to fix it. And, you know, and so they try to hit the big red reset button, but it doesn't pop up until 8 weeks later, and they need to find a reason.
Yeah.
That I guess that makes total. I don't know how much of The West Wing you ever watched. If you watched all the way through, like toward the end of Sorkin's,
I watched all the way up through when Sorkin left.
That was a thing that that Sorkin did. He did the most ham-handed version of that, and it's where when he realized NBC was about to fire him from the show, and it was, you know, and it was a whole lot of like, you know, Soviet Russia, Aaron Sorkin fires you. And so what he did is when did they get to the end of the fourth season? This is why the end of the fourth season of The West Wing is so terrible, because I think Sorkin just figured he was just like in this fit of pique, figured that he would just trash the entire show and just give them something totally broken and useless. He did it like a Thomas Harris. And so that's why there's that insane cavalcade of events where in the space of like, on what is a pretty rational and grounded show for most of its 4-year run, in the space of like 3 weeks, less than 3 hours of television time, like 90 minutes, the vice president has to resign, then Zoe Bartlett is kidnapped, then Bartlett resigns, then John Goodman becomes the president. And I mean, And it was, and the thing is, all of that had to happen because Sorkin, I think, was just trying to completely, like, get his creation, like, out of the meddlesome hands of NBC so that they would not then, like, wreck the candy store when they got it. I think he effectively wanted to give them, he wanted to make sure that by the time they got it, it was an entirely different show. And so they couldn't ruin it because it would already be gone. So he tried to scuttle everything. It was like sinking the submarine. So they can't get, like, you know, the launch codes or whatever. But that's where you saw, like, a few weeks earlier, you saw, like, the boat start to go like and make this huge turn because he realized, like, oh God, I got to change everything, like, now. So that must be what they're doing on House.
Yeah, I think so.
I realized this, by the way, just in your darker moments. When the Wolf Hour comes tonight, realize we've got 7 weeks left of this season.
God.
There's 7 episodes left. I mean, we're only 2/3 of the way through it. So there you go. Let that be your clutch that to your bosom while you drift off to sleep. You know, and the thing is, here we are talking about a show that it sounds like we're not enjoying, and we're not.
No.
But the other thing is, like, the show still got such huge ratings that you know there's, like, a great number of people still watching it, all of whom are looking at everybody. It's become this, like, a television teepee, where it is this, like, self-supporting system of people, all of whom are just watching it because they think everybody else is watching it. It's like some big Amway meeting.
I watch it out of affection for Hugh Laurie. That's really it. I still have so much huge affection for Hugh Laurie because I've been a fan of his for so
right.
very long. I've been watching him for, God, decades at this point. So, you know, I just love him so much that I will keep watching the show. But it's like, I do, like I said, you know, if I didn't have to pay attention to it for us to talk about it, I would really just be sitting there, like, you know, playing online poker or
yeah.
something while it was on in the background.
My final thought about last night is, first of all, is Chase, is it me or is Chase becoming puffy? Like with every, is he sort of
he's
sponging up a little week from a little bit from every week? Because they talked about him being a pretty boy, mm-hmm. and I looked at him last night. He's got the kind of fat face going on, and I wonder if that's a thing. Like if that's the actor doing it and not the character. If it's a thing that at some point the writers are going to have to just like either talk to him about, or if they just have to get into a room and shut the door and figure out exactly how they're gonna deal with it on the show.
Well, Amber Tamblyn is looking really puffy in the face too, and I think it's a matter of they don't have enough to do, so they may just be hanging around Services too much because they're just not given anything. They have like 4 lines an episode, so they're just hanging out in the cookie trailer.
Or she's just using cream cheese to mask her disappointment at having made the transition to this television series instead of the other things she could be doing.
Maybe
I get a bit of Broadway. So there's that. The other note about last night is the problem with episodes like last night with big set pieces like the dream stuff is that I think. It makes the rest of the episode look even worse by comparison. It's like cleaning part of a window, and then you go, oh, God, the rest of this is filthy. And it gives them license to just suck at the rest of the episode. You know, it's like the rest of the episode just becomes the brown stuff in the Lucky Charms because it's like they don't have to, you know. Because
yeah.
it's like every 12 minutes you'll pay it off with a dance number.
And the case of the week with the kid with the pipe bombs
yeah.
and the stuff was so limp. It was just, it really didn't even feel like they were trying.
Does it seem like they could just get rid of that altogether?
At this point, yeah, just go with the soap opera. Just go with, and then honestly, if you just went with the soap opera and turned it into kind of the sort of Grey's Anatomy thing where it's really just about the people and not about the cases, then you could just give some of the other actors more to do.
Well, because I think at one point on 6 Feet Under, didn't they stop doing that thing where they killed off somebody in the opening, before
yeah.
the opening credits? Because they realized, like, they'd made the point. Like, the device had gone, you know, had gone
yes,
stale.
They're funeral directors.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, that's, you know, I think the deal is they pitch it based on a template. And then some shows, I think, have the sort of courage to change the template. And some shows don't. I think, actually, there's a season, I think it's maybe season 4 of The Wire, where they're actually, you know, where for a long period of time, they get away from the whole notion of the wiretapping unit altogether. I think they actually don't even do that because they realize they don't need that as a hook anymore. So, all right. We're going to find something. We have to augment this at least with something other than we got this one. We got Justified. So I'm going to find some third thing that you and I are both that we can agree on.
Because did we all cut the cord on Californication? I know I did. I did this season.
We've had this conversation.
I watched about the first 4 or 5 episodes of this season, and I thought I was getting into it. I thought I was getting back into it, and then I didn't watch it for 3 weeks and realized I'd forgotten, and
yeah.
went, I guess I'm not back in.
Where you
it
looked
after
up at the calendar and went, oh, I haven't watched that in like
yeah.
a month. I told Dawn that I actually was such a fan of the third season finale, which was you know, a huge series of down endings. I mean, it was just relentlessly down. And so much so, actually, that I have only watched it that one time. I have not gone back. I have not. And I've watched the first two seasons of that show, you know, 15 times each. But I've never gone back and watched that third season finale. And I will again at some point. But I remember you hear that expression my jaw was hanging, my mouth was agape. I don't know that that happens to me a lot when I watch TV, but that third season finale really did leave me. I mean, I was stunned. And it was at that point I just made the decision, like, this season was so bad, but they've ended it so well and so perfectly that I'm just not going to go back. And, so for me, that is kind of, I'm just going to view the series as ending at that point. You know what we should do, though, is we should actually just find a series that is done and finished and out on DVD, that neither of us has seen. And okay. Actually, because I think a lot of people, you know what it could be? It could be like a sort of book club, you know, but
Spartacus. Let me recommend Spartacus.
Oh, yeah, I didn't watch Spartacus.
Oh, my God, it was fantastic.
The series.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, boy. It's got a little bit of everything in that. I mean.
The TV series.
The sex, the violence. I mean, it's over the top. I think Sam Raimi is a producer.
Okay. Everything you said about... You just said Spartacus, and then all of your clarifying statements just left me more and more confused. You're like, they've got everything. Sex, violence. Oh. So like the TV series. All right. How many seasons are they into this? Is it just the one?
Spartacus?
Yeah, or has it been on for
one,
some...
One, and then Spartacus got the cancer in real life.
Really?
Yeah. And so then now they did a 6-episode prequel, which was... I was so sad when that just ended.
Wow.
I miss my sex and violence.
See, that's the thing. Is like it almost has to be a series that is completely run because it's like a book club, but without all that thinking. Where it's like, you know, because especially now with this tyranny of choice, where people, you know, I hear this a lot. People are like, well, what should I watch now? Or I just finished watching something or other. What is the next series I should watch? You know, on Netflix. And so we could actually pick a series that we have not seen, okay. Start it from scratch, watch like one episode a week.
Well, let's take some suggestions. We got Spartacus on the table. If people want to email us and send it, we'll pick some.
So send that to Rick and or Don at rickemerson.com. That is Rick or Don at rickemerson.com. You go to rickemerson.com, by the way. You can also find out everything about the Sleep Country Foster Kids Pajama Bowl, which is happening this Sunday at the Beaverton location. And you can donate there as well. You can pledge to support the team, which is, of course, supporting several things. You're supporting the team. You're supporting the merciless crushing of Aaron Duran and all of his comrades. You're supporting Jenny and Rob and all of the other folks on the team, and children as well. So, I mean, really, children. I mean, for the children, if nothing else, you really ought to do this. So, go to rickemerson.com or rickemersonshow.com, as I will be doing after the program today, and then you can come on out Sunday the 13th at 11 a.m. at the Beaverton location of Big Al's.
So. And thank you to everyone who's already donated. We really appreciate it.
And also, just on behalf of Don and Cheryl and Bruce and myself and everybody, just thank you to you guys for...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, for doing this. I mean, because I forget exactly how a few years ago when it started... If we were actually in the air, like, kind of pitching for volunteers or looking for people, and you guys sort of went,
We all had to pay $100.
Wow.
I know.
For something that I was involved with, you paid $100. I mean, the mind just reels. But I do know that that in subsequent years, you guys really have just been, you've just done it of your own volition, which, all kidding aside, it really does mean a lot. So I do not know that I have ever, I certainly have never worked anywhere or worked anywhere with anyone who had an audience that did anything like this. So it means a lot. So on behalf of all of us, thank you guys for, I mean, including last year when I was just sitting at home in my underpants. I mean, I didn't even have a show, just sort of sitting there just kind of looking at the window being depressed.
Well, and you know, one thing is that I think we genuinely enjoy each other's company. We have fun when we're together.
Yeah, it's certainly like a family now.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that goes a long way to saying that you've created this environment, and especially now with, I hate to go back to like Facebook or whatever, where we do now kind of see each other on the internet every day and talk, and we've got, you know, your fans have a really great thing, you know?
They're like a family, and you're the funny uncle.
I know.
I should actually say at this point, speaking of the family and whatever, I was going to post something about this online, and I guess I still will, but I should also say here, it's that thing where, you know, it was my birthday yesterday, as it is your birthday today, so... I reached the point, I think, by about 7:45 a.m. yesterday, where it was not logistically tenable for me to respond back to everyone and say, and thank you for your birthday wish. You know, it's that thing where it's like on my phone. And it was like, it was just, they were sort of, you know, because Facebook is such an interconnected community. And so this will undoubtedly happen to you as well, where you will reach that event horizon where you realize it's just not practical to respond to everybody who has posted like some sort of cartoon rose or something on your Facebook page for your birthday.
Well, I feel terrible because I don't respond to emails as well as I should. And then I think maybe people, you know, are annoyed with me or just think that I'm snooty. But instead, what I should do is just immediately hammer out a response and say, I will get to that later, and then the later doesn't happen.
What they don't know is that the snootiness is separate from the not responding to email.
Right.
Actually.
Yeah, me not responding is laziness.
Yes.
Not the snootiness is a completely separate thing entirely.
So just as a blanket, and I'll post something online about this as well, put it on Facebook, but just a thank you to everybody who took time out to mm-hmm. you know, post something about my birthday and remember it either. That does not go unnoticed or unappreciated. So thank you to all y'all. I appreciate that. All right, we're going to have a brief musical interlude here in a moment. Jenny, have ye a request as we end the show?
You know I love me the Roger Klein.
All right, well, that is what we will do then. We'll have some Roger Klein here as soon as the show wraps in mere moments. After musical interlude, we will have an encore of the day's episode of Legion of News, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. Join us tomorrow when our guest will include Ms. Kelly Clark from Willamette Week in her final appearance before she goes on maternity leave. So that'll be tomorrow. We'll talk about the closing of Rocco's Pizza, about which I've gotten several emails so far today. So thank you again, Jenny, Rob, everybody. Thank you for coming in today, and happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
From all of us. The Rick Emerson radio program comes your way each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. After a brief interlude again, we will have an encore of Legion of News and then an encore of the Rick Emerson radio program. It is Tuesday, March 8th, 2011, and that is the frequency. Kenneth, as always, thank you for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
So just how far down you want to go? We could talk it out over a cup of joe, and you could look deep into my eyes like I was a supermodel. Uh-huh, come on! So it's you and me, baby, no one else we could trust. We'll say nothing to no one, no how it would bust. And never crack a smile or flinch or cry for nobody. Uh-uh. I give your ID card to the border guard. Now your alias says your captain, Jean-Luc Picard of the United Federation of Planets. Cause he won't speak English anyway. Everybody knows that the world's full. So meet me at the mission at midnight and we'll divvy up there. Yeah. Everybody knows that the world's full of stupid people. Well, I got the pistols, so I'll keep the pesos. Yeah, and that seems fair. Tank of the sheriff's car and sausage up in his tires, and that won't get very far when they finally get the word that there's been a hold up. Uh-huh. Give your ID card to the border guard. Now your alias says your captain, Jean-Luc Picard of the United Federation of Planets. Cause he won't speak English anyway. Everybody knows if the world's full. Mission at midnight, we'll divvy up there. And everybody knows that the world's full of stupid people. Well, I got the pistols, so I'll keep the pesos. Yeah, and that seems fair. That seems fair.
but she won't speak English anyway. And everybody knows if the world is full of stupid people, so meet me at the mission at midnight and we'll divvy up there. And everybody knows if the world's full of stupid people, well, I got the pistols, so I'll keep the pesos. Yeah, and that seems fair. And that seems fair.